hurts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away.
All right, folks, we are live. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis on this Sunday edition, October 18th, 2009. And it is my pleasure today, in the second hour, we're going to have filmmaker Kirby Dick on. He did the film This Film Is Not Yet Rated, a movie I came across a few years back, very impressed with, really takes on the hypocrisy of the Motion Picture Association of America and the ratings board. And the movie's incredible. If you've not seen This Film Is Not Yet Rated, go to your local DVD store. A lot of them have it. Netflix has it. It's a mainline film. You should be able to find it somewhere. But right now, he's got a new film out that's making its rounds on HBO. May even be available on HBO On Demand. I actually discussed the film over at the local Hooters knockoff Twin Peaks with one of the waitresses. They come over and sit with you and, you know, they want to chat. Well, they don't really want to chat. They want to make money, but they have to chat. And we got a documentary film. She's like, you know, I was up till like 3 a.m. last night and I was watching this movie. And I'm like, was it Outrage? She's like, is that the one about the gay politicians being outed? I'm like, that is the one. And she's like, man, it was really good. And it really showed a lot of their hypocrisy. And I have to agree. I finally watched it this morning after getting a screener copy in on Friday. And it's excellent. We're going to be going over that film. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. Huge stackers of news in the economy. We've got some JFK news that I'm going to go over briefly. I wanted to touch upon it because the New York Times is just such a disgusting, revolting publication. The way they frame things, they need to be outed. They need to be outed as liars, which they are. So we're going to go over that. CIA is still cagey about Oswald mystery. We're going to go over some of this climate garbage. Remember, climate change means a carbon tax for you. And on the Jones Show before, we played that global government clip from Lord Monckton, just coming out saying, yes, I've read this legislation that's coming up at the Copenhagen Treaty, and it's world government, there's no democracy, it's a carbon tax, it's everything we've been telling you. And I've talked about this Copenhagen event for months and months and months now. Talked about it 6 months ago. In fact, what I need some of the info warriors out there to do is pull up some of the YouTube clips or perhaps some of the podcast archives where I do discuss this Copenhagen event and how it will be the next step towards global governance and a climate change tax, a carbon tax on you. You're bad. And that's why we're having Arnold Schwarzenegger come out and say, 40-inch television? Sorry. You can't have a 42-inch. You can't I have a 50-inch television at my place in New York. Am I bad? Am I a bad guy for having a 50-inch television? Oh, no. It hurts the environment to watch TV. And if you read into any of this propaganda, it's all about population control. It's like this book, Ecoscience, right here, with Holdren and Ehrlich and all these other guys. What were they talking about in the 70s when they wrote this? They weren't talking about global warming. They were saying global cooling was going to kill a billion people. Global cooling killing a billion people by 2020. Huh. But now it's global warming or it's climate change, because they had to admit it's not really global warming. It's climate change. And they're trying to build, make you believe that evil CO2 is the cause of it. What we exhale as human beings, as life forms. Forget about human beings. How about every life form out there, except for plants that use it to breathe? So CO2 as a pollutant, it's like a bad joke. It's worse than a bad joke because you're going to be paying real money for it, even though your dollar is being crashed and the jobless are flocking to sign up for the military. The anemic job market and increase to sign-on bonuses and new attitudes towards military service are proving to be a winning combination for recruiting. That's right. The National Armed Service has wrapped up a record year. Weird. The military had a record year. Didn't we say that? Again, pull it up 6 months ago. I said, as they crash the economy, what jobs are going to be available? Military jobs and AmeriCorps jobs. Civil service jobs. Because there's no industry in this country anymore. We'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis.
I won't throw, swicky
something we don't really have a lot of these days is peace, love, and understanding. If anybody caught the tune that we just came into right there. Especially when these two unpopular wars that we have been really just taken by the wayside, taken out of the debate altogether. You're no longer allowed to speak out against the war in Iraq and Afghanistan because we have a new president and he didn't have anything to do with getting us into this war, even though he did vote to fund it. And he told everybody that we were going to be getting out of Iraq and getting out of Afghanistan, and that didn't happen. Said we were going to be closing Guantanamo Bay. That's not likely either. And we told you from the get-go, this would not be a withdrawal. This would be a redistribution of forces from Iraq into Afghanistan. And as they implode the economy and you can't find a job anywhere, there's no benefits anywhere else. Well, we got benefits for you over in the military. Jobless flock to sign up for the military. A record year. A record year. Is that a CNN? The nation's armed services wrapped up a record year for recruiting as a withering job market and bigger bonuses trumped two unpopular wars. They admit it right there. As the economy worsens for the private sector, for the middle class, they will be subverted into the slave class. You're already slaves. You're already paying your taxes. I know. You're already drinking the mercury. You're loving the fluoride. But you're going to be loving it even more and more as you have to go to the state for food. And you have to go to the state for insurance, and you have to go to the state for a job. And that's why so many people are signing up for the military, because they're looking at these bonuses and saying, hey, I can feed my kids. They love the government at this point. They're their saviors. They're willing to go shoot brown people in another nation as long as they have a job. And this is how tyranny works. It's incremental. It feeds on your fears. The Department of Defense said it met or exceeded recruitment goals for all branches of the armed services for the fiscal year of 2009, which ended September 30th. For the first time since 1973, This is their best in 26 years. When the draft ended and U.S. forces withdrew from Vietnam, we were pleased to report that for the first time since the advent of the all-volunteer force, all of the military components, active and reserve, meet their numbers as well as their quality goals, said Bill Carr, Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Military Personnel Policy at the Pentagon's press conference on Tuesday. The active duty Air Force, Marine Corps, and Navy all met their goals as measured by the number of fresh recruits, while the Army achieved 108%. 108% of its recruitment goals, the DOD said, going above and beyond. The reserves for each branch exceeded their goals for recruitment numbers, and the National Guard matched its goal. The Pentagon also exceeded its quality goals, as 96% of the active duty recruits were high school graduates, surpassing a 90% benchmark. Unbelievable. So there it is right here. Let's show it to you so you don't think I just made it up, because I know I'm a big liar over here. I love to lie, apparently, when all I do is read mainstream articles on the air and say, hey, this is pretty screwed up, don't you think? We should be doing something about this. We should be getting out of Afghanistan, getting out of Iraq, building infrastructure here, you know, factories that make things. But no, they'll just gut the last thing we had, the auto industry, and make it part of their North American Union plan, redistributing the big factories into Canada and Mexico, and leaving two in the United States out of seven. Oh, my. It doesn't even get a majority here after the big government bailouts and takeover. And that's the facts. That's what really occurred. That's reality. We're not in fairy tale land, in Leprechaun and Unicorn Village, okay? This is real. And they're pumping up. Let's talk about AmeriCorps for a second, and service for a second. What happened here in Texas just Friday? Well, Barack Obama went to Texas A&M with George H.W. Bush, the big daddy, who, when he gave his 1990, I believe, State of the Union address, he not only discussed a new world order at length, but he discussed 1,000 points of light. You know, we're probably going to play my Invisible Empire trailer because I have that in there. It was just something that really stuck out in my mind as important. And he started the 1,000 Points of Light Foundation, okay? Now, the 1,000 Points of Light Foundation, back in the late 80s, 89, I believe it started, 20 years ago now, was all about service and getting you to serve your country. Kind of like the precursor to what you see today. So Obama got up there and he was like, this is the greatest thing ever. George Bush is a man of integrity. I mean, he's a man of integrity. No, he's a man embroiled in scandal and global criminal cartels, which we are going to expose in Invisible Empire. Let me tell you, George H.W. Bush, his hands aren't dirty. They're filthy. They're bloody. They're gross. They're devastating. And he's not even at the top of the pyramid. He's like a capitan. All right, I'm gonna keep getting some financial news, because if it's not hitting home yet that we are screwed as a country, that the dollar is gone, that these people are gutting the economy to get you accustomed to a second world type lifestyle, let's ingrain it in a little harder, okay? And by the way, we're going to take your phone calls, 888-201-2244, 512-646-1776. That's 888-201-2244. California Bank becomes 99th in the U.S. to be shut down in 2009. Regulators shut down San Joaquin Bank in California on Friday, marking the 99th failure this year of a federally insured bank. And by the way, the FDIC... they're in the red till 2012, folks. That's 3 years away. They're in the red. That's not the black. So you want to be in the black. You want to have money. So the FDIC that's supposed to insure a bank like this is broke. It's CNNmoney.com. Not JasonBurmesArena.com. CNNmoney.com. FDIC bank in the red until 2012. We'll get into that in a second. But look at these bank closures. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corp was appointed receiver of San Joaquin Bank based in Bakersfield, California. It had $775 million in assets and $631 million in deposits as of September 29th. The FDIC said the bank's deposits will be assumed by Citizens Business Bank based in Ontario, California. Its five branches will reopen Monday as branches of Citizens Business Bank. See, this is a consolidation of power. This is what I've been saying again for months now. It is a consolidation of power. It is to squeeze out the little banks and to get you into the super banks, the Chase Manhattans, which are now the Bank of America's, the Merrill Lynch's. They don't want community-owned banks. They want more control. They want an integrated Federal Reserve, IMF, and World Bank to control every facet of your life. Every facet. From when you wake up in the morning to when you go to sleep at night. Believe the hype. These people don't care. Okay? Tyranny is their model. I'm going to show you that in a second. I mean, there's just so much to go over here. Let's go to this FDIC bank fund in the red until 2012. Even as regulators try to replenish deposit insurance fund, it will be over 2 years before it boasts a positive balance, warns agency chief. They're just coming out and admitting they don't have any money. They don't have anything. The government insurance fund designed to protect consumer bank deposits will likely stay in the red through 2012, Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. Chief Sheila Bair said Wednesday. And by the way, I'm taping this right now. I didn't realize this was the hearing that's on C-SPAN at the moment. Maybe over by now, but it looked like it was an all-day affair. I've already taped like 3 or 4 hours of this. I'm going to have to watch it because Sinich looked like he was asking some tough questions. Testifying before members of the Senate Banking Committee, the nation's top commercial bank regulator stressed that her agency was taking immediate steps to replenish the dwindling fund. But she said those efforts would not put the rescue fund in the black until little more than 2 years from now at the earliest. They're admitting they have no money at the FDIC that is supposed to insure your bank. It's okay. It's just Jason Burmes reading it. He must be just saying it and looking at a piece of paper. I mean, the paper can't actually say what Jason's saying. That would be unbelievable that the FDIC doesn't have any money. Meanwhile, Tarpley will tell you this, and most people just laugh at Tarpley. And I don't agree with everything Webster Tarpley says, but boy, is he a great analyst on the U.S. and world economy. He's very good. Again, I may not agree with some of his solutions, but his analysis is spot on. The fund has come under severe strain in recent months amid the recent surge in bank failures. 98 banks, and now it's 99. We just read you the story. 99 banks have failed so far this year, which has reduced the fund's value to $10 billion from $45 billion a year ago. And those are hedge numbers, too. Again, the bailout wasn't $700 billion. What we know of right now, it's $27 trillion with a T. Trillion. That's T daddy. It's not B. It's not billion. $27 trillion. It's an incomprehensible number. It really is. Last month, the agency painted an even more dire picture, estimating that the fund is currently in the red after taking into account future bank failures it anticipates will happen, and it will happen. That would not be the first time the fund has had a negative balance. During the S&L crisis of the late 1980s and the early 1990s, it slipped into the red. Yeah, see, again, they're trying to soften the blow. It's never been this bad, I promise you. This is the death of the dollar, and that's why they're putting it all over the place. In fact, the New York Post openly admitting that the euro and the yen are now being used as reserve currencies in a lot of cases, dumping the dollar as the world reserve currency, screwing over the American people yet again. Yet again. Now, on the other side, we're going to take your calls. We're going to go to Clayton, Eric, Steve, Jeff, Mark, and many others. I've got stackers of news here. We're going to get into this. CIA is still cagey about Oswald mystery. You know, it's really not much of a mystery. This memorandum, declassified in 2004, clearly states that he was trained by the CIA under the Office of Naval Intelligence. I have the memorandum in my hand. But Jason, that doesn't exist. It's not real. That's a blank piece of paper. Oh, you're showing it to me. Well, I'm just going to imagine it doesn't exist. We'll be back after this. It's the InfoWarrior with Jason Burmis, PrisonPlanet.tv, InfoWars.com. Go check me out at Facebook/TheInfoWarrior. The economy, they are so brazen, so outlandish, so ridiculous that they have given themselves record bonuses as Wall Street has made record profits. And then the Obama administration acts like the good guys by saying it's offensive. They don't do anything about it. They just say it's offensive. It's okay. No big deal. It's offensive. Oh, you just gave away $20 billion in bonuses while 20,000 people lost their jobs. No big deal. And I got to sit there and watch the local news as these guys on Wall Street are like, they work so hard, they really deserve it. Boy, they are working really hard. Yeah, they're working real hard to screw you over. A top White House aide lashed out on Sunday as Wall Street firms that are handing out huge bonuses while the rest of the economy struggles and small businesses cannot create jobs because of a lack of credit. Highlighting a disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street. See, it's all they want to blame Main Street. There's a disconnect. No, the banksters, the globalists, the elitists out there are squeezing the little guy. They're purposely screwing them over to blast out the economy. They'll just do a little currency exchange. They're never going to lose any of their wealth. All their wealth is going to go up and away. While you lose everything you got. Yeah, you'll take out a second and third mortgage. They're still going to take your home. They're still going to take your car. They're still going to tax you because you have a 42-inch television. I mean, when they're telling you how big your TV has to be, is that what wakes you up, America? I mean, really, I know you've got a love affair with the television. So perhaps that's the one that, I can't have more than a 40-inch. Maybe that's the one that finally wakes you up. I didn't think about that. That could be the one. But probably not all those hippies in California probably think it's a good thing. And then Alex touched on this in the previous hour. I was at, this place, this little like grill bar / eatery during the UT Oklahoma game. I think it's Oklahoma University. Am I right? Was it Oklahoma? You know who. Yeah, it was Oklahoma, right? See, I don't even know. Okay. The Red River of Rivalry. Okay, whatever. I get rivalries. They're fun. I go into this place. It is packed out. I could barely get a seat. Me and my graphics guy go. All the waitresses are forced to go buy a UT shirt. They don't even provide the UT shirt for them. They have to go buy them, and then they have to cut them up so that they look trashy or whatever. It's pretty ridiculous. But let me tell you, I was there when UT scored that first touchdown. It erupted like it was like we had won the war. It was all over. We're leaving Afghanistan. I mean, people were going nuts. people were going absolutely nuts. And then you should have heard the groans and the gripes about 10 minutes later when Oklahoma tied it up with a touchdown. I do believe that Texas did end up winning that game, but I didn't stick around to watch it. I don't care. It's a college football game. It has absolutely zero effect on my life. And let me tell you something. Unless you bet on the game, it has absolutely zero impact on your life. And if you did bet on the game and it would have a big impact, sounds like you might have a gambling problem. Anyway, all right, let's go to some calls. We're going to take some calls on the other side, hit all this news. And remember, we got Kirby Dick, the director of Outrage, and this film is not yet rated in about half an hour. So let's go to Clayton in Florida. Clayton, you're on the line.
Hi. I'm actually was trying to call the Alex Jones show, but I just wanted to make 2 points in regard to what was on that. Mm-hmm. That was the first point about the vaccinations mm-hmm. that actually cause you major health problems and actually change your DNA. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. Army requires massive vaccinations.
No, it's mandatory. Let me stop you just for a second. It's absolutely mandatory for every single person in the military, despite what President Barack Obama says. He gets up there and says there will be no mandatory vaccinations. No one will be forced to take this. Meanwhile, everybody in the National Guard, the Army, the Air Force, and the Marines are forced to take it, and members of the Defense Department. Go ahead.
And I actually was on their website, and it's not just like one vaccine. It's like you got to take like 10 vaccines. Mm-hmm. And that changes your DNA. That some of those... It's got to change your DNA structure. So combining that, I mean, there was this huge segment on the Alex Jones show just right before you about these churches and the eugenics movement of the 20s and how they actually got churches to do sermons about eugenics.
So, no, it's absolutely true. It's modern day right now. They've got churches doing clergy response teams telling you martial law is good. And to listen to the government in case there is a pandemic. Bow down to WHO Level 6 and the UN government. Thank you for the call, sir. We'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis, PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com. Good to be back live. I did not so much a rebroadcast, but a midweek broadcast on Wednesday. We replayed it on Sunday, all because I thought I was going to New York. And I guess here's my rant against United Airlines. How dare they? I go down to the airport, I stick my card in, and they're like, oh, we're sorry, but your connecting flight isn't going to make it because we've been delayed. It's a beautiful day out, but somehow it's going to be delayed. And we'd like you to sit in Dulles Airport for 18 hours and then not get to your destination till 20 hours later. And that would have just had me miss everything I was even going to New York to do. So I got a refund. And I came back and worked on the film last weekend, which actually I broke a lot of ground. I wrote a lot on my Iran-Contra section and Barry Seal and Zbigniew Brzezinski and BCCI and just a lot of scandals out there that exposed this criminal network that is still in power today. Very interesting stuff. Later on in the show, we're also going to show you that trailer of Invisible Empire, show you that 1,000 points of light quote by George H.W. Bush, and how the progression has now gotten into the Points of Light Foundation and Barack Obama's glowing endorsement of it and his love fest over George H.W. Bush and what a great serviceman he was, making jokes about him being a war hero and all these other nonsensical things. He's an elitist. He's a murderer. He's a sociopath. He's not a good person, Barack. All right, let's go to Eric in Pennsylvania. Eric, you're on the line.
Talk to you, Jason.
Good to talk to you too, buddy.
All right. Let's see. I got like 4 things I really want to talk about. I hope you let me talk about at least 2 of them.
All right, go for it.
No, all right. About 2 months ago, Lena Horowitz was on Alex's show, and he said about vitamin D.
Mm-hmm,
and like how it's really good for you, it prevents cancer and helps your immune system, protect you against the flu.
Also cures depression. People who don't get a lot of sunlight are more apt to be depressed. The more sunlight you get, the happier you usually are. It's just nature. Go ahead.
Well, I've been taking 5,000 IU 2 to 4 times a day, And I can't believe how much better I feel. I sleep really good now. I haven't been depressed at all. I'm actually stronger in my workouts. And I broke my hand last week punching something, and it's almost healed. It's like amazing.
It's amazing what nutrition and vitamins can do for you, other than the drugs that they push on you for absurd rates that they say, by the way, if you have any of these existing conditions, you may kill yourself or others. I mean, you hear these things, and I watch a 90-second commercial, and 45 seconds of the commercial is warning you about all the terrible side effects, yet you never see promotion of vitamins anywhere, Eric, anywhere.
Never. Like that Ambien commercial. Remember that one? It's like 2 minutes long of side effects. Like, good Lord.
Yeah. The Ambien commercial is the worst one, with the rooster, where it's like, you may be hallucinating. You may be walking in your sleep. You may be killing your coworkers. Don't worry. Ambien is delicious. Go ahead.
All normal.
Eric. Yeah, it's all very normal.
Quick side note. I was watching Fight Club last week, and I noticed the last 2 minutes.
When they blow up the city?
And you see all the buildings collapse?
Yeah, in a controlled demolition. Fight Club's intense, man.
That might be good to show somebody. Also, I came across some information yesterday that there's going to be something called the New Copenhagen Treaty in December in Canada.
We're
going to
play the clip. And actually, I've talked about this Copenhagen Treaty in the past, especially when we were talking about the G20 in April. And this Copenhagen Treaty is, again, a 200-page document which calls for world government, which calls for a carbon tax of everybody. Totally and completely nightmarish. But you say Copenhagen to somebody and they think it's a place to go smoke pot over in Amsterdam. I hate to tell everybody, this is where they are going to bring in the hardline climate tyranny. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, they're also going to, from what I understand, they're also going to redistribute the world's wealth, and because the Western world was so bad using up all the oil, particularly the United States, we're going to have to give hundreds of billions and possibly trillions of dollars to the third world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. It is going to be a redistribution of wealth, but we're going to be the ones suffering. I thank you for the call, Eric. I hope I got at least two of those points in for you. Let's go to Steve in Michigan. Steve, you're on the line.
Yo, B, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
All right, man. It's a whole lot easier getting on your show than what it is getting on Alex's show. What's up with that?
Hey, you know, sometimes it's tough to get on Jones's show. Sometimes he doesn't take many callers. I'm a pretty big caller-based show. I try to get through 30 or 40 callers in the three-hour period. So, shoot, man.
Yeah, I hear you. I hope you get back on nice again. I've been talking to my credit union, mm-hmm. and they've been trying to assure me that their money is totally devoid from any national banks.
So what are they telling you, that the FDIC doesn't apply to them?
I don't know about that. I need to ask them about that. They said they're privately owned.
Mm-hmm.
It is a small community. Mm-hmm. There's like four or five different, I'd say maybe about seven different offices in about three different cities. So they are not a large chain or anything.
I'll tell you this. Local banking is probably better in order to keep your dollars and cents, especially if it's a community bank like that where it does have 7 branches or 10 branches or 15 branches in the state. However, it can't protect you from the inflation of the dollar and the fact that they've gutted it as a world reserve currency, and it keeps declining against what is the actual global currency, the special drawing rights unit. Now, it's not a physical coin or a bill, but it's what the IMF is now distributing to people. So as that, I think it's still at about 60 cents compared to one SDR unit. But as it slides to, 50 cents and then 40 cents and then 30 cents, they can keep all your money all they want. It's not going to be worth anything, Steve.
Yeah. Well, my question to them was, I'm not so concerned about my money because I don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother has about 100 large in her account, and mm-hmm. I'm worried about her more than I am me.
Well, I'll tell you what. What I would do immediately is take at least 10 to 20% of that and invest it into gold while it's still only between 1,000 and 1,100 before it shoots up to 1,500, up to 2,000. What's the worst that's going to happen? Eventually, it'll drop to $800 or $700. The dollar, it probably won't be $800 or $700 because the dollar will be dead, yet it will maintain its value whether it's in euros or pounds or whatever the preferred currency will be if they ever bring in an Amero. I don't know if that's going to happen. it will retain value. It may just go up to $3,000 an ounce because the dollar will be so eviscerated, but it will maintain, instead of her losing a third of her money, say she has that $100,000 in, the dollar drops, that $100,000 is really only worth $60,000. She spends $10,000 or $20,000 of that on gold. That $10,000 or $20,000 is going to maintain that value, stopping her from losing any real value on the money she already has. I thank you for the call, Steve. I hope that made sense to you. You know what? I want to bring this clip up since we just discussed it with Eric. This is Lord Monckton. Lord Monckton, he has read the Copenhagen Treaty. He knows what's about to go down in December. And he's in the United States trying to warn us that our freedom is about to be eviscerated by tyranny once again. Hit the clip.
And what are we doing instead? At Copenhagen, this December, weeks away, a treaty will be signed. Your president will sign it. Most of the third world countries will sign it because they think they're going to get money out of it. Most of the left-wing regimes around the world, like the European Union, will rubber stamp it. Virtually nobody won't sign it. I have read that treaty. And what it says is this: that a world government is going to be created. The word government actually appears as the first of three purposes of the new entity. The second purpose is the transfer of wealth from the countries of the West to third world countries in satisfaction of what is called coyly a climate debt, because we've been burning CO2 and they haven't, and we've been screwing up the climate. We haven't been screwing up the climate, but that's the line. And the third purpose of this new entity, this government, is enforcement. How many of you think that the word election or democracy or vote or ballot occurs anywhere in the 200 pages of that treaty? Quite right, it doesn't appear once. So at last, the communists who piled out of the Berlin Wall and into the environmental movement and took over Greenpeace so that my friends who founded it left within a year because they'd captured it, now the apotheosis is at hand. They are about to impose a communist world government on the world. You have a president who has very strong sympathies with that point of view. He's going to sign. He'll sign anything. He's a Nobel Peace Laureate. Of course he'll sign it. And the trouble is this. If that treaty is signed, your constitution says that it takes precedence over your constitution. And you can't resile from that treaty unless you get the agreement of all the other states' parties. And because you'll be the biggest paying country, they're not going to let you out. So, thank you, America. You were the beacon of freedom for the world. It is a privilege merely to stand on this soil of freedom while it is still free. But in the next few weeks, unless you stop it, your president will sign your freedom, your democracy, and your prosperity away forever. And neither you nor any subsequent government you may elect will have any power whatsoever to take it back again. That is how serious it is. I have read the treaty. I've seen this stuff about government and climate debt and enforcement. They are going to do this to you, whether you like it or no. But I think it is here, here in your great nation, which I so love and I so admire. It is here that perhaps at this 11th hour, at the 59th minute and the 59th second, you will rise up and you will stop your president from signing that dreadful treaty, that purposeless treaty, for there is no problem with the climate, and even if there were, economically speaking, there's nothing we can do about it. So I end by saying to you the words that Winston Churchill addressed to your president in the darkest hour before the dawn of freedom in the Second World War. He quoted from your great poet Longfellow, "Sail on, O ship of state. Sail on, O Union, strong and great. Humanity, with all its fears, with all the hopes of future years, is hanging breathless on thy fate." Thank you.
And there it is. I mean, that guy really just laid it right out for you. There is nothing wrong with the climate. And even if there were, charging us for that climate. And remember, people who have the money, like Al Gore, who just has lavish homes everywhere. And he's like, it's okay. I can afford the carbon offsets. I can pay for it. He's just laughing at you because you're the one that's going to have to give up your car. You're the one who's going to have to give up your big house when you can't pay the enormous taxes on it. He's not. He's probably going to buy it up, then pee on it, and laugh in your face. And this is serious. It is the 11th hour. Do you realize how dark it is? Most people don't even know this treaty exists. They don't know what Copenhagen is. They just think, oh, we're gonna save the environment. Sorry, Chip Riverdale, you're not saving the environment. He talked about a communist one-world government. This, out of the New York Times today, Russia's leaders see China as template for ruling. Oh, how lovely. Nearly two decades after the collapse of the Communist Party, Russia's rulers have hit upon a model for future success. The Communist Party. Or at least the one that reigns next door. Like an envious underachiever, Vladimir Putin's party, United Russia is increasingly examining how it can emulate the Chinese Communist Party, especially its skill in shepherding China through the financial crisis, relatively unbowed. Reason they're able to do that is because they're used to one-child policies, slave labor, and awful living conditions. That's why they're able to stave off the global financial crisis. They're a slave state. Let me repeat it. They're a slave state. And Russia is openly coming out and saying, this is the model. China is the model. That's why they're part of this Brazil, Russia, Indonesia, and China coalition for some kind of a world currency. See, you got it from the right, and you got it from the left. And what does it achieve? It achieves globalization all the way up the middle. Running down the middle like the Heisman Trophy winner, baby. Just boom. And I'll show people this headline. They'll be like, well, that's Russia. That's Russia. Well, if Russia and China sign on to this Copenhagen Treaty, guess what? That's the United States, too. But don't take my word for it. I'm just reading mainstream news articles. That's all. Let's go to some more callers. Let's hit Jeff in Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the line.
Yes. How are you doing?
Good.
Oh, yes. Now, as far as jobs is concerned, private security is also in demand, too, which I believe eventually, if we should have a false flag attack, private security will be ran by Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. Now, let me take the thought of the military. They're forcing veterans to take the vaccine. Now, here's my thought. Don't be surprised if the UN military doesn't take vaccine, or some globalist military doesn't take the vaccine or take a safe vaccine. Look, the German Bundeswehr is taking a safe vaccine, and so forth. So who's to say that the bad guys get the safe vaccine while America gets the bad vaccine?
Well, Jeff, the bottom line is this: no one needs to take a safe or deadly vaccine because the swine flu is a huge hoax. If you get the swine flu, it's time for a nap and some ginger ale, a little chicken noodle soup. That's all you need. You're going to get better. All this hype about one-third of pregnant women who contract swine flu die and hundreds of children have died is Johnny nonsense. It's just completely ridiculous. It's total hype. And what is real is the mercury, the formaldehyde, the squalene, the chance at Guillain-Barré. Those are real. If you take the shot, whether it's good for you or not, look, don't take the vaccination under any circumstance. That's my advice to everybody out there. I thank you for the call, Jeff. Let's hit Mark in Georgia. Mark, you're online.
Hey, man. Hey, man. Listen, this is one thing that many truths will not bring up. You know what the five remaining countries that do not have a Rothschild-controlled private central bank are? You know what I would use to head up the list?
No. Tell me. What are the five countries?
Iran is one of them. Mm-hmm. Libya, North mm-hmm. Korea, Syria, and Cuba. And so I've done this study of where, you know, the same things that Aman Energy actually said get misrepresented. And I'm like, how suspicious. Care to guess what's been scratched off that list most recently?
I don't know.
Iraq and Afghanistan were on that list.
Oh, that's right.
And it's like,
well, you look at Libya, though. Hold on, Mark. You look at Libya, though. You got to admit, Libya looks like it's under Western intelligence thumb. I mean, Gaddafi, even, you know, him getting up in front of the UN and talking about conspiracy theories, I guess, on the vaccines, and he talked about Oswald. He cowed down right after 9/11, and he really I see Gaddafi as a huge puppet of the situation. But let's get your take.
The African Union, but as I understand it, Trafficant was framed right after he called for a new investigation as to the Lockerbie bombing, with allegations that the Mossad may have done a false flag operation there.
Mark, I got to let you go because we're at the end of the segment, but I don't know enough about Trafficant to give my opinion. I know there's something dirty there for sure. We're going to come back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis. Segment about 6 minutes. The director of Outrage is all over HBO right now, and of course this film is not yet rated. Really looking forward to that interview. We're going to slam through a few more callers in this segment, hit up some big news blitzes, and then after the Dick interview we are going to continue to take your calls at 888-201-2244. Let's go to Anton in Canada. Anton, you're on the line.
Hey Jason, how's it going?
Good.
Okay, just a quick note on the devaluation of currency. Now, I've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, I used to go to Greece every summer. Now, back then, it was, just a standard comparison. Back then, when I was a kid, a can of Coke was 100 drachmas. And now, just before the euro came in, they devalued the currency, so now it's about 300 drachmas to 1 euro. So
Okay. The
1 euro now buys you the can of Coke. So just about everybody's wealth has been wiped out to about one-third before bringing in this euro, and I'm very concerned that that can happen here.
And I think it is going to happen here. I think they have to really bridge the gap between the poverty line here in the United States and Canada with that of Mexico before they're able to launch an Amero or a North American currency by another name. But we're really not that far off when I'm reading this from Reuters. Sorry, no jobs. This is California. California, obviously the largest state with a illegal immigrant population. But as California dumps and then maybe Arizona dumps and then maybe Florida dumps, as this starts to happen, they're going to say, well, the only way to save us is we need a unified currency, and you can keep your regional currencies, but we've got to move towards this and unionize everything the same way they did with the European Union. But you notice as soon as they got their European Union in, the pound still flourishes. You know, the pound is still around because the pound and the euro are the dominating currencies of that region, and their real goal is to consolidate power and consolidate currencies and bring in the European Union. The European Union was talked about in the 50s by the Bilderberg Group. They've got the papers. You can get them online. Just type in European Union, Bilderberg Group. We did stories on it on Infowars.com. These people are patient. They are super patient. I've got Bush in his New World Order commemorative speech in front of Maxwell Air Force Base in the early 90s talking about a unified Europe and a strong and whole Europe and promoting a European Union before it actually existed. This agenda has lasted a long time. And you know what? That's why we need to bring up that Invisible Empire trailer. In fact, I got to let you go. I thank you for the calling, Anton.
All right. Yeah,
before we do that, I got to dump you because I got to play this trailer. I want to play the Outrage trailer for Kirby Dick coming up. I really can't take any time out of the interview, so because I only have them for 30 minutes. What do we got, about 90 seconds here? Let's hit the trailer.
He was my first sexual relationship, as he was a number of my fraternity brothers.
He asked me if I'd come back to his apartment at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I said, what was that all about, you and the congressman? And he said, we're having a relationship.
He grabbed me by the shoulder and very boldly said, remember, You never saw me. You've never been here.
He had a relationship with him, a sexual relationship with him.
We never discussed his political platform or what he believed in. We just had sex.
Let me be clear. I am not gay.
There are names in the folks in the Congress in high positions of power who are leading a secret double life.
He's a closeted gay man.
Again, he's a closeted gay man too.
They have been chasing us for years. We're going to chase back.
I think that each one of these outings puts a little...
Save the victory speeches for later. Streets on fire. The mob goes wild, wild, wild. Streets on fire. The mob goes wild. 21 guns, last minute pain.
We are back and live. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmis. We are streaming live via video over at PrisonPlanet.tv. And my next guest is really just on the cutting edge of filmmaking, one of my favorite filmmakers out there. I fell in love with his work when I saw This Film Is Not Yet Rated a few years back. I actually got the screener copy of Outrage, which is playing right now on HBO all over the place. And I watched it this morning. It was excellent. It's Kirby Dick. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Now, before we get into your latest outrage, I really want to talk about This Film Is Not Yet Rated, because you took the hypocrisy of the Motion Picture Association of America and really exposed that their rating system is a sham. And what I really loved was that not only do you expose, you know, Jack Valente coming into Hollywood back in the day, revamping the whole system, the rating system in general, but you would put the NC-17 version or the unrated version against the R-rated version, and they weren't that much different, and it seemed really hypocritical. You pull a lot of really great stunts throughout the film, including the one where you call up that woman and you're not allowed to actually use her voice, so you have to use like a cartoon parody of her voice. How did this film come about? How did you get into doing this?
Well, as an independent filmmaker, I've always been angered at the hypocrisy of the rating system. This is a rating system that's set up by the major studios. The MPAA is a trade organization for the six major film studios, and they run it. They not only rate their own films, they rate foreign films, they rate independent films, and they set it up so that their films get favorable ratings, and anybody else's, you know, it's sort of up for grabs. And they always go after films, no matter, you know, they can be some of the greatest artists, greatest filmmakers in the world. If they have some issues with sexual content, very often they get an NC-17 rating, and I just decided, you know, this has been going on for too long, 40 years, and I wanted to expose it.
Well, it's just an excellent piece of work, and I encourage anybody out there with a Netflix account to go check it out there or go to Blockbuster. It's in a lot of the major chains. If you haven't seen This Film Is Not Yet Rated, you really need to. Now, you took that, and now you've moved on from Hollywood to Washington, D.C., where you really put together a pretty comparable piece of work exposing the hypocrisy of closeted homosexuals within Washington, D.C., not only in the political arena, but also in the media arena,
right,
and showing how these guys, you know, do one thing and say another.
Exactly. I focus on closeted politicians who vote anti-gay. There's there's many closeted politicians in Hollywood, but the ones that aren't hypocrites, that don't vote anti-gay, those are the ones that I don't expose them. But the ones that claim to be straight, when in fact they're gay, and at the same time go out and deny rights to millions of American gay and lesbian citizens, that's hypocrisy, and those are the politicians that I out, actually.
And some of those politicians, I mean, let's just go through them. Frist, the governor in Florida, is a main focus in this film. The senator who was caught trying to solicit sex in an airport bathroom is a focus in this film.
Yeah.
You even have the clips of Forbes back in the day, how he wasn't allowed to be outed until he died. You know, this billionaire publisher with all this influence throughout the media and politics. And even when he was outed, I think it was actually a publication called Outed Weekly. Out Week. It wasn't really discussed in the mainstream media even after that happened.
Right. And in fact, ironically, a journalist for Time Magazine, who had actually coined the term outing, critiqued and actually came down, was very critical on the fact that Outweek was reporting on on these closeted, in this case, closeted titan of industry, when in fact he himself was closeted. That's yet another irony. So, but yeah, this has been going on, obviously, for quite a long time, and it's really been the gay press that's sort of been in the vanguard of this for the last 20 years. It's been asking the mainstream media to cover it. The mainstream media hasn't been.
Well, we're going to come back. We're going to discuss so much more about Outrage. It's airing on HBO all over the place. I'm not sure if you can get it on demand, but if you can, I'm really encouraging you to go check out this film. Kirby Dick is our guest. We'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior.
There is a war going on for your mind. Industry insiders sling test tube babies to corporate crackheads. They flash logos and blast ghettos. Their embroidered neckties say, stop snitching. Conscious rappers and whistleblowers get stitches made of acupuncture needles and marionette strings. There is a war going on for your mind. Professional wrestlers and vice presidents want you to believe them. The desert sky is their blue screen. They superimpose explosions. They shout at you. Pay no attention to the men behind the barred curtain, nor the craters beneath the tree flags. Those hoods are there for your protection, and the medias these days are the size of corpses. There is a war going on for your mind.
We are the insurgents.
We are back. We are joined by Kirby Dick, the documentary filmmaker behind This Film Is Not Yet Rated and most recently Outrage, which is all over HBO. Before we go back to him, I want to remind people that I am also a documentary filmmaker. You can check out my two latest films, Loose Change, Final Cut, and Fabled Enemies over at Infowars.com, or you can watch them for free all over YouTube and Google Video, or go check out the trailer for my latest Invisible Empire set to drop this February. Now, you've had actually a lot of success on the indie scene. This film was very well received at Tribeca, correct?
Yeah, it got incredible coverage there from the media.
Now, I know how it is with, you know, doing these documentaries and getting distribution, and Magnolia is really one of the only people that will touch this subject matter. Was it even a struggle to get them to distribute it? I mean, how was the process to get this out? I believe it launched in May, and now, you know, in October, we're seeing it on HBO, where millions of people are getting to watch this, and I think it's a great thing. I mean, what's the struggle there? Was this relatively easy to promote and pitch, or was it really a struggle?
Well, you know, any documentary takes some time, but there was a great deal of anger among a lot of people, actually, in the film business toward the hypocrisy that was going on. Well, toward, you know, the Bush administration and their anti-gay policy, you know, supporting the federal marriage amendment. And I think a lot of people, you know, put money into the film because they felt that they wanted to do something to, you know, expose the kind, you know, some of the people who were supporting Bush and supporting the federal marriage amendment. You know, to Magnolia's credit, they did not shy away from this material. They were pretty excited about it from the beginning, and they were great during distribution. They did not, you know, it's a very hard hitting film, and you know, once they saw it, I was wondering. I thought, you know, are they going to start saying, take this out, take that out. No, they didn't put their hands on it at all. They just got behind it and did a really good job distributing it. So hats off to Magnolia.
Well, that is excellent news. I want to get back into the hypocrisy of the media. And one of the really stark clips that you show, and I remember watching this live. I did not get to see the refeed of it, but I was watching Bill Maher on Larry King Live. I watch a lot of news. And I think Bill Maher outs Melman, right? He outs Melman. Now, I didn't realize, because, again, I didn't see the rebroadcast, but on the rebroadcast, they just edit that scene out. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons. I mean, their attorneys will say they're afraid of being sued, but, of course, I mean, he's a public figure. There is no way that Melman would have any case. So that's complete, you know, that's completely bogus.
Yeah.
I think more, you know, the CNN is an organization that is very closely tied to, you know, politics. I mean, there's no news. And I think, like many other powerful mainstream news outlets, they do not want to anger powerful, you know, politicians, or even in this case, you know, the Republican Party, because they have to have access to these people all the time. And oftentimes, a lot of the people that own these news outlets or even larger corporations have a lot of business that's being done on Capitol Hill, and they figure, why should I get, you know, the guy who's sort of running the Republican Party, why should I get them angry at me? I'm trying to get some of my bills through Congress. And so they just sort of work hand in glove with Congress a lot of the times.
Now, you know, what I found interesting about the film is you do ask the question, why is it that it seems like most of these people who are closeted homosexuals that are voting against pro-homosexual legislation are Republicans, when, you know, that seems to be the basis of the religious right and the Christians out there? Why do you think that they choose to be Republicans on that end when a lot of the ideologies would be diametrically opposed?
Well, a lot of these people, you know, were Republican before even the, you know, the Republican Party really started coming out and attacking gays and lesbians. In fact, Barney Frank in our film says in the 1970s, the Democrats and the Republicans were about equal on gay rights. But in the late 80s and into the 90s and obviously into 2000, that's when the Republican Party really turned and in a very cynical decision, decided to go after gays and lesbians as a way, as a wedge issue to get additional votes. And so what happened is all their politicians who were gay suddenly had to go much deeper into the closet. And, you know, so it really in some ways hurt their own politicians. Now, what these politicians should have done is they should have, you know, stood up and said, I'm opposed to this. But, of course, they were afraid to do that because they felt like if they did, then people would suspect they're gay. So this is the problem with the closet. But they decided to vote against gay rights so that no one would suspect they were gay, even though, you know, we have to believe that all these politicians would be voting for gay rights if they had a choice because they are gay.
Well, I would hope so. But, you know, I see them playing politics and you watch this movie and, I mean, you have these great graphics where you go through their voting records and some of these people have been voting for 20 years and it's just no on this, no against age research, no against civil unions, you know, no, 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 no. And you would think that they'd even, you know, they'd want to take some kind of a stance to help themselves, really. But that's just not the case, is it?
No, I mean, you know, individually have made a kind of a cynical calculation that it's more important for them to stay in party, in power, and, you know, and vote against their own kind, really, than to come out and be open about this. Now, on the other hand, one thing that can be said is, as horrid as these voting records are, they too are victims of homophobia. If there was no homophobia in this country, mm-hmm. they would be out. These politicians, Larry Craig and Charlie Crist, they would all be out. There would be no reason for them to be in the closet in the same way that anybody who's a straight politician is out. So, and I look at that in the film. I also look at the, you know, sort of the terrible psychological toll it takes on these politicians. As horrid as their voting record is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to take you to task a little bit here because you have a section on George W. Bush where he's, again, trying to get an amendment passed where we would need an amendment to, you know, make gay marriage illegal and define it as the union between a man and a woman.
Right.
And you make the point in the film that this would be the only piece of legislation that actually restricts a right rather than guaranteeing it through the Constitution and Bill of Rights. I think that's a great point. But there are allegations against George W. Bush himself. We have Leola McGinnis that says she witnessed a homosexual act between him and Victor Ash. We know about the scandal within the White House back in 2004, I think it broke, with James Gannon, who ended up being James Guckard, this homosexual he was a madam, really, at militarystuds.com. And even Bill Maher back then. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Bill Maher back then made the point that he was probably the boyfriend of somebody within the administration. Now, I'm not saying he was dating Bush, but there are pictures of Bush, you know, kissing this guy's head and very close to him and cheek to cheek. So what's your take on that? Was that just too hot to touch or you couldn't find any corroborating evidence? What's your opinion?
Well, it wasn't too hot. I mean, we looked into that. We just couldn't get enough to corroborate it. You know, there's obviously, you know, some evidence out there. But what I was concerned about is I really made sure that, you know, everybody that I had in my film, I had the amount of corroboration that the, you know, anybody in the mainstream media would demand. Because if I didn't, I would get attacked on that and they would dismiss the whole film. So it was, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, we looked into it. We actually chose to, you know, we did actually cut an entire section around Jeff Gannon and then didn't put him in just because I know, it's great. But you know what? I made the decision that I wanted to focus on much more powerful people, which were politicians. The Jeff Gannon story is fantastic. It's really funny. It's a great story. It says a lot about a lot of things in the Republican Party. I totally agree. It's just, I was really trying to, you know, nail these, you know, governors and high, you know, powerful representatives who are actually still in, in power right now, and that's what I was really trying to expose. But yep, it's if we could fair use, you know, if we could fair use material on the DVD, we would have it on the DVD.
So did you use fair use for this picture as well? Because I know that you used fair use all over the place, and this film is not yet rated, or they would have never commissioned you to use these Hollywood movies up against one another. You know, I watched some of the clips on there. Obviously, some of them are off of YouTube, the famous, you know, Shepard Smith J-Lo piece that's all over the place, and some other ones. And, you know, in my films, I have to use fair use all the time and go into the Vanderbilt archives and everything else. Was there a lot of fair use in this movie?
Oh, yeah. There were hundreds of clips, I think.
Wow,
yeah,
excellent.
I mean, this is you know, a real opportunity now for documentary filmmakers. Finally, you know, documentary filmmakers are freed from not having to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for clips, which has restricted, you know, their ability to actually get the truth out. And now the fair use law is getting more and more settled. If you do it according to the sort of guidelines of using fair use, and you don't exploit it, and you know, use too much material or use it in the wrong way, you're pretty safe. So it's really opened up documentary filmmaking, and certainly I know that this film was not yet rated. In some ways, was a kind of one of the breakthrough films, because
it went
right after the studio. The irony of it is it was critiquing the studio with material, the studio material that we had fair used.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I use that all the time when I talk about fair use on my own projects, because like you said, you know, until we had access to these, you know, news archives at a reasonable rate, or the stuff that's on YouTube or in the C-SPAN archives, it was almost impossible to make these films just budget-wise, because, you know, to license a 90-second clip, they want $10,000. And I'm sorry, I just don't have $10,000 to license a 90-second clip in a movie that's going to be 90 minutes to 2 hours long. It really cripples what we're able to do. We're coming up on a break, but in the final segment, I want to see what's next for Kirby Dick. What's next for this film, Outrage? I mean, after HBO, where is it going to go? Is it going to be out there on DVD? Because I haven't seen it out in the stores yet. Are you going to continue to put it into indie theaters? What's your next project? I'm excited about that. Where can people check out all your material?
Should I answer that now?
Yeah, just tell them where they can get your material now, and then we'll go over that other stuff in the next
segment. Well, there's a lot. I mean, I have a lot of stuff out on DVD, so you could probably get it on Netflix, you get it on Amazon, you get it in a you know.
There's no KirbyDick.com?
KirbyDick.com is in the process of getting redone, so shortly, yes, you could pull it off of there as well.
All right, we'll be back with Kirby Dick for the final segment. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes, PrisonPlanet.tv, InfoWars.com.
Trouble so hard, ooh, Lord, my trouble so hard. Don't nobody know my trouble for God. Don't.
All right, folks, final segment with filmmaker Kirby Dick. This film is not yet rated, and more recently, Outrage, all over HBO right now. I know I hit you up with a lot of things at the end there, but what's the future of this new film, Outrage? Are we going to see it on DVD shortly?
Yeah.
And then what's your next project?
Well, Outrage will be playing on HBO the rest of the month, and I think somewhat into November, and then it will come out on DVD. I think it's January 19th. My next project, I'm going back to DC, but I can't say anything more about it.
Oh, come on!
I can't. You know, if I talked about closeted politicians on a show before I'd made the film, I wouldn't have gotten anything on them. So,
Well, I'll agree with you there.
As much as I'd love to you know, let your listeners know, I got to keep it under the radar at this point.
Well, I completely understand. And let me just say this. Let me give the one small criticism that I have for this film. Now, in the beginning, you talk about a scandal in the 50s very briefly, but I think that and, you know, Mark Foley, who you touch on very shortly, really have to be differentiated, because Foley was caught, you know, trying to have sex with a 16-year-old page. And in the beginning, in that 50s scandal, some of these guys were caught with underage boys. I think there's a huge difference when they cross the line into pedophilia, you know, whether it would be a boy or a girl. And, you know, I think that those people do need to be treated as criminals, because I know that you have a extensive interview with one of Foley's aides throughout the whole thing. Correct?
Right.
And I feel like those are different issues. And even Barney Frank, who in the late 80s, early 90s, got caught running his boyfriend, Stephen Gobi, who he put on a payroll, got caught running a prostitution ring out of his D.C. apartment and then over at the local Chevy Chase middle school for like 9 to 12-year-olds. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Barney Frank. I know that he gave you some good interviews. He had some good insight. He got a slap on the wrist for that. And Mark Foley didn't do any prison time, didn't go to jail for what he did. He's fallen into the backdrop. I hope he doesn't get, you know, any more political accolades, any more positions out there. I hope he's not just able to apologize and have it all go away. Surely you find there's a difference between, you know, people that are closeted homosexuals that vote against, you know, gay legislation than people that are pedophiles, correct?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that goes for whether they're straight or gay. And in fact, mm-hmm. I think there's more of a propensity for, you know, straight people to be pedophiles, I think, percentage-wise than gays. But mm-hmm. When it comes to, you know, Mark Foley, the reason we didn't actually focus on Mark Foley was he wasn't a hypocrite. Early when he came into office in the 90s, he did vote anti-gay, but he quickly changed his voting record and, you know, went ahead and voted pro-gay. So even though he was closeted, certainly, and it was a huge scandal, he wasn't a hypocrite, and that's what our film was focusing on, hypocrisy. Now, you know, obviously it's completely irresponsible for him to be having any kind of relationships with, you know, pages. That's, you know, I think it's not only political suicide, but very irresponsible. Mm-hmm. You know, in D.C., the law, I think the age of consent is 16. So, you know, there's no pedophilia at all at play here. So, you can't call Mark Foley a pedophile. You can call him, you know, irresponsible. You can call him, you know, dishonest. He's not. He wasn't out. He was, you know, in many ways, trying to pretend. You know, he was straight certainly to his constituency, but he's not a pedophile.
Okay. Well, I disagree, but you know, we'll have to disagree on that one.
I mean, the age of consent. You know, 16. I mean, that's. You might disapprove of it, but that's the law. You know.
No, I hear you. But even in the states where they have, you know, the age of consent at 14, I'm still like, you know, we need to change that law. But I hear you. I understand where you're coming from there.
Right.
What's your favorite, in the last 90 seconds of this interview, what's your favorite part about this movie? I mean, what's the section that really is a standout section in the film?
Well, what I like is that I focus on Charlie Crist, the current governor of Florida. I mean, here's a person who could... you know, he's a very popular governor. He's probably going to end up being senator, may end up running for president. And he had an opportunity to really change history in Florida by not supporting Amendment 2, which not only outlawed gay marriage, but outlawed civil unions. And because he was afraid that people would think he was gay, he supported that. And not only that, he went out and got married. Now, he's a closeted man getting married, and... What I like about it is I got some wonderful footage of you know, there. I was there at the wedding, and I got, you know, probably the best footage of any news organization. I just happened to be in the right place. And so you really see the tragedy is here's a man who may someday be president and is still, you know, closeted. And I think if we think about it, you know, it's going to be a very tragic situation if we have a closeted president, and particularly one who's still, you know, hypocrite and voting anti-gay.
Well, Kirby Dick, you're a very talented filmmaker. I think your films are on the cutting edge and very important both socially and politically out there. Go check them out. KirbyDick.com is under construction, but you can check everything out over at Netflix and HBO as Outrage right now. Thank you so much. We'll be back after this. It's The Info Warrior with Jason Burmis.
Well, come on, all of you big, strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam.
We are back. Way down with filmmaker Kirby Dick. If you missed any of the program, remember we have the podcast over at theinfowarrior.com following the show. Or you can subscribe to prisonplanet.tv, watch us live streaming right now, or get us in WMV format over at prisonplanet.tv. We're going to continue to take your calls in just a moment after this slight news blitz, 888-201-2244, or you can call 512-646-1776. Now, we're really heavy into the economy, and I think it's important to look at this. Sorry, no jobs. This is California. If you're looking for work, don't look in Cali, the world's eighth largest economy. You see, we're so big, folks, that the state of California has the eighth largest economy in the world. In the world. However, they're saying that the big financial center is no longer New York in America. In fact, that's the third one. It's London, and then Australia is second. We reported on that last week on The Info Warrior. The world's eighth largest economy is still finding its feet after suffering multiple economic shocks, including a housing slump, mortgage crisis, and a recession. And it's more than a recession, okay? They're telling you that the unemployment rate is around 9.8%. It's much higher. Here they're telling you that the unemployment rate is 12.2%. That probably means upwards of 20%. Upwards of 20% unemployment. As industries in other U.S. states prepare to rehire on signs of recovery, yeah, right, firms in California are still waiting for their economy to rebound. And remember, Schwarzenegger, he wants to go green. He wants to save us all from the evil global warming. Ooh, so you can't have a big screen TV. Makes a lot of sense, I know. All right, let's go to Alexi in Washington. Alexi, you're on the line.
Hi, Jason. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm calling today. I've been trying to get through to Alex for quite some time, and I'm calling today because I have a grandchild who's been trafficked for 10 years.
Has been what for 10 years? I'm sorry, I missed that. Has been what for 10 years?
Trafficked.
Oh.
Trafficked. Sold.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sold.
Now I understand you're talking about the sex slave trade.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. In this country. And, I have called the Justice Department. I had someone call the Justice Department who has a friend at the Justice Department. Nothing ever happened. I've sent pictures, hundreds and hundreds of pictures to the FBI, ICAC, the local police, everyone. No one will do anything.
It is incredible, but you know, it kind of dovetails into the interview we just had with Kirby Dick and kind of my last points that some of these people are indeed, you know, they're not just, and again, this isn't just homosexuals. There are other people out there that are heterosexual. They are trafficking in children. And, you know, to me, you know, him saying that 16 is the age of consent in Washington, D.C., well, 14 is the age of consent in some parts of this country as well. That doesn't mean that a 35-year-old or a 50-year-old should be having sex with young teenagers. They're still children.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and I think it's kind of ridiculous to make that argument. But, you know, he does good work. I'm going to give him a pass on that. I didn't really have the time to argue that. But, yeah, it actually happens in this country. And there was a large sex slave trade that was exposed in the White House, which was in relation to this Stephen Gobe guy that I just discussed, who was on the payroll of Barney Frank and running a prostitution ring at his D.C. apartment. He was running a prostitution ring at the local Chevy Chase Middle School as well. He was having sex with the principal there. This is all Washington Times, Newsweek, Time, and they get a slap on the wrist and they act like it doesn't happen. And it's because, unfortunately, this is the modern Rome. These people, these elites, really do think that they're entitled to having sex with young children. They're like pets. They're like their little concubines. And until we come to that realization, and the realization that the FBI and the CIA are not here to help, they're here to cover up for their masters, we're never going to get anywhere.
That's right. No, nobody will do anything. Right now, this moment that we're speaking, there are 350,000 children sitting in homes that they have tracked through computer tracking that are being traded over the Internet or are being raped on the Internet, and no one will do anything about it. No one.
And it's so sad. And a lot of these people that are doing this end up being, you know, the foster care parents. They run these kids. They have, you know, a stable of 20 or 30 children. They pick 5, 10, 15 of them that they think that they can traffic sexually and make money off of, and they do so. And, you know, this same group that I talked about getting outed in the late 80s, early 90s also was running drugs through these children. And they're not really given a chance. I mean, they're put into a mental state where they're there to be subservient to others. They're there to do sexual acts for others. They're there to run drugs for others, and they're treated like animals. And this should not be going on. This is not the humanity that I want to be a part of. But, you know, this sociopathic ruling class, the predator class out there, it's their fun and games. It's their power. It's their sociopathic type mentality. I thank you so much for the call, Alexi, because this is a problem that I'm going to shine a little light on in my film, Invisible Empire. In fact, why don't we bring up the trailer for Invisible Empire? I'm going to take another call. The call in line is 888-201-2244 or 512-646-1776. After that call, we're going to go to the trailer for my latest flick. Let's go to Scott in Washington. Scott, you're on the line. Yes,
Jason,
sir, Scott. Yes.
I was watching Susie Orman's show last night, and she had a lady on there. I guess she did a video, kind of a revolting from the bank she had paying her credit card because they had raised, they had doubled the interest on her, tripled the interest or whatever they did. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or not. I guess she had gotten like 400 some thousand views on YouTube or something about that. And she was also, she had been talking about the what was going on with the tea parties and the people being mad and revolting against the banks. And she was talking about, she was listening to economists that were talking about the economy was going to collapse. She didn't say who it was, but I kind of had a suspicion who she was talking about. But, you know, anyway, you know, and Susie Orman usually gives good advice, although, you know, but she was going on about the fact that, you know, she was talking about Bank of America. She wasn't really coming out against Bank of America, and you got to understand the consequences of your FICO score and all of that. And, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, listen, these banks are manipulating and controlling anyway and decreasing people's credit limits, whether or not they had good credit or not, and raising and jacking up these interest rates and manipulating this whole thing with the FICO thing. You know, and I'm just sitting here kind of thinking, you know, the fact that she's really not getting at the root of the problem. Now, keep in mind, this is CNBC, so, you know, that's probably going to have a lot to do with
it. Well, how far are these people really able to go, Scott? And I thank you for the call. I mean, Susie Orman, I don't watch it enough to really have an opinion on her, but I don't really watch enough Dr. Oz because I don't watch any of it. To have an opinion on him, all I know is, hey, this guy has a TV show. You know, Oprah heavily promoted him. But when push came to shove, he had to go on the television and tell everybody that the flu shot was good and tasty and you should probably take it. But he was at least good enough to warn everybody about the possible, you know, side effects, Guillain-Barré. And he was at least honest enough that he's not Dr. Oz at home. He's Mr. Oz. And his children, I think he said he had four children, were not going to be taking the shot. That's interesting. The doctor that was just promoting the shot for 5 or 6 minutes, just told us that his kids won't be receiving the shot. And then he also put another little tasty nugget of truth out there. Again, Barack Obama got up in front of the American people and he said, hey, no one's going to have to take this shot. It won't be mandatory for anybody. We know the military had to take the shot, whether you're in the National Guard, the Air Force, the Marines, the Navy. You better believe it, you were taking it, even people in the Department of Defense. But Dr. Oz got up there and he said, yeah, everybody in my hospital has also been mandated to take it. And we knew there was a huge, huge, huge uprising in New York as over 500 workers went out to the Capitol building in Albany and said, look, we are not taking this shot. And they were told if they didn't take the shot, they were going to lose their jobs because they organized, because they formed like Voltron and said no to this. They were able to keep their jobs and not take the shot. That's how you stand up. You stand up united. All right, let's go to Steve in Houston. Steve, you're on the line.
Yeah, hey, good evening, Jason. Hey, earlier this week, I think it was on Tuesday, there was an article on Infowars.com. I don't know if you remember seeing this, but it was about, and I don't remember who wrote it, but it was about this Oaks apartment complex out in Oregon and how they told a guy that he couldn't have an American flag on his motorcycle. Do you remember that?
I did not see that article, no.
Yeah, well, I, like usual, trying to be proactive, I took the liberty of looking up the number for this place, called it on Wednesday the 14th, and the guy that answered, I mentioned why I was calling, I just said I'd like to talk to management. He goes, well, how'd you like to talk to the owner? I said, sure. He goes, you're talking to him. So I explained why I was calling, and the article, what it said was that this apartment complex, which has their own banners that they fly, is telling, you know, this one resident and subsequently other ones they can't fly the American flag. So I promptly proceeded to talk to this owner of the complex out there in all, and it's, of all things, Albany, Oregon. It's called the Oaks Apartment, about this situation. And what he told me was that, well, this is because the property manager misinterpreted the fair property laws. Now, are you familiar with those?
No, not at all, but I'm going to guess that they're kind of like some little union where they say you can't have this on your property or you're not allowed to have, you know, a grill outside or you're supposed to keep your lawn at a certain length, all these little Nazi tactics to keep you in line and conform.
Yeah, well, what he said was fair property laws, what it has to do with is that if you let one, you're going to have to let everybody. So the way he explained it to me, if I let, you know, if we let this guy have an American flag, we got to let people put up a Nazi flag, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I told him, I said, first of all, this is America. we're supposed to fly the American flag. This is the United States of America. That flag represents the people of this nation, which are the actual government. And he also said that he doesn't like how stories on the internet misinterpreted the situation, but he got things straightened out, and so this guy or any resident can have an American flag on their motorcycle, car, apartment, etc. But he said, you know, I find it interesting that this guy's so patriotic, he rides a rice burner, meaning a foreign-made, you know, motorcycle, and, you know, said some other things. I said, sir, look, I don't know about all that. It's the principle of the situation. This is America. The man has a right, and he should, as an American, fly the American flag. And I said, if the fair property laws are what you're saying they are, then what you need to do is have some principle as an American and stand up for what's right as an American citizen, regardless of that. He said, well, then we'll be fined. I said, well, so be it. You got to stand up for principle. And I'll tell you something, Jason. Alex today was talking about his frustration, and I'm leading into that. About how people just seem to be so stupid and uncooperative when it comes to waking them up to this situation of the New World Order and what they're doing. And I just had this thought, you know, it's a lot easier to be a slave, to go with the status quo, to go with the flow in your mind immediately anyway, than to do what's right and stand for freedom and be a citizen and understand that there is a price. You know, that old saying, eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. But what these people don't understand is what they think is easy right now, in the long run, it's going to cost them a whole lot more than it's going to cost us who are taking a stand for what we know is right now. It may cost us our lives, et cetera, but at least we'll know that we're standing for what's right and be, you know, a doing the business of trying to wake up as many of our fellow human beings as we can, because, you know, that's what really matters. It's standing
for
principle and standing for what's right, regardless of the cost, and that's the problem. There's a cost, and the average American today doesn't want to pay that cost because they're lazy.
Well, not only they're lazy, they're victims of groupthink. And, again, you know, I was in Twin Peaks watching the game yesterday just because I came into work and I wanted to stop and get something to eat with the graphics guy, and it was just total group tribal mentality. Everybody just high-fiving one another like this game meant something. It didn't mean anything, Steve. I thank you so much for the call. All it meant was they could wave a little flag and drink some beers and say, we're better than Oklahoma! We're better than... You know, those are states. Texas and Oklahoma, I don't think one's better than the other. We're all human beings. No, we got a better football team, boy. You see that spiral? It was all the way downfield. Boom. And I think they even have fantasy leagues for college football now. I know that the Hoos out there, even on the way in. All right, I'm in my little cubicle today. I'm in my little cubicle typing away, printing up some articles, looking for what I'm going to talk about on the show today. And I hear who's talking about, I don't know, two players or something. He just threw a 30-yard pass. He picked it up and brought it all the way down. I think he's talking to me. And I'm like, dude, I don't even know what the hell you're talking. He's on the cell phone. And he's like, it's burning me up right now. Oh, man. My old lady called me. I can't believe this. People are hooked into fantasy land. And, you know, I'm sad I'm even making an example out of him. Let's make an example out of somebody else. Final Fantasy Online, World of Warcraft. These people are engulfed in fantasy world. I'm a level 12 warlock with a super magic power. And I mean, let me give you an example. I used to go down to this little computer shop in Oneonta, New York, because a lot of people didn't know how to fix computers out there. You'd have to go all the way to Albany. They only knew a little bit more than me or had some equipment that I didn't have, okay? They owned this little place. It was called, I think it's ISD. Okay. Now, I go in there, and over like an 18-month period, this one guy, he's in his late 40s, early 50s, easy. Late 40s, early 50s, easy. Now, when I first used to go in there, he was working on computers all the time. He had a laptop open, or he'd have a desktop open, and he'd be installing a system or finding a virus, all that other stuff. I start coming in 6 months later, and he's sitting there playing World of Warcraft every single time. I mean, he is on this thing like, and I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? I'm like, you got a wife, you got kids. What are you doing? I'm like, you have to pay for this monthly. He's like, there's no other better entertainment out there. This is like the greatest game ever. You don't know until you've played it. Well, let me tell you something. I went there about 4 months after these shenanigans that were occurring. And guess what? He was an owner. He got bought out by the other guy and thrown out. He's like, look, man, I need you to work on computers. I need you off the World of Warcraft. And he got so absorbed and so engulfed in a game, in a fantasy world, that he lost his livelihood. And he's a nice guy. I mean, I wish him the best. But at the same time, it's like, dude, step up to the plate and be a real man and get out of this little fantasy box. Look, I like playing Mortal Kombat every once in a while. You know, I like a little Soul Calibur here and there. I like to play Doom. You know, Grand Theft Auto may not be my thing, but I understand people that play it. I'll play a little Metroid, a Mario title. But I can't tell you the last time I even picked up a video game controller. It's probably like, I don't know, 3-6 weeks ago. I played it for 20 minutes and I put it down because I'm an adult. And there are adults out there, people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s that dedicate 6, 10, 12 hours to these things. Okay, I've worked with people. I'm not going to name any names, but they are online playing, you know, Conflict, Desert Storm, or what's one of the big shooters out there? One of the big war ones out there. I can't even think. I know there's a ton of them out there. But they're on these things, and they're like, Delta 5. Yeah, we got them around the corner. Yes, Call of Duty's a big one. There's some other ones out there, too. But it boggles my mind. How can you be so wrapped up in this fantasy? We'll be back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burns.
For you, no letters endorsing you. Pole position in the coffin is what it's costing you. The caucus bosses who control the fortunes, through the mortgages of a culture with losses through and through. But it's the rebel arms. Godspeed with devil's charm. The shit made get switch blades in every arm. And this way we ixnay on any harm. Cause snakes play and fakes lay like hidden bombs. We march in unison. The soul is truer than eternal missions with just a lifetime to do it in.
Coming up, we're gonna play the trailer for Invisible Empire, my upcoming feature-length film. I'm really excited about it, really coming together. I want to thank my graphics guy, Whiteside, for really blowing it up, making it big, and making it look unlike any other Patriot movie out there, really. I think people are going to be blown away by the graphics in this film, the flow of this film, the information in this film, and really trying to make a movie that is going to disillusion the term New World Order and really bring it full circle into what the New World Order is, who's been trying to achieve a New World Order, what this means for us, what is global governance, global government, because to me that's just semantics. There were some people on my Facebook page, facebook.com/TheInfoWarrior, that were like bickering over the term government and governance. It's a semantical term for these people, okay? They don't care whether they get global government or global governance. As long as they can get treaties passed where we have to give third world nations a ton of our money, or we have to pay a carbon tax, or we have to be under international law like WHO level 6 and pandemics, they don't care. We're going to go to a couple calls in this segment. Ronnie and Chuck are holding. We'll go to them in just a moment. World has less than 5 years to stop uncontrollable climate change. Who's this? The World Wildlife Foundation, of course. I mean, these people are sick. Scientists generally agree that the world could keep a temperature rise in a dangerous level of 2 degrees, 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, if greenhouse gas emissions are halved by 2050. However, a new report from the WWF found it will require a green industrial revolution by 2014. 5 years or we're all going to die. Oh, my God. I mean, talk about the sky is falling scenario. You know what's going to happen in 5 years, folks? I'm going to be 5 years older. That's what's going to happen. I guarantee it. The world's not ending in 5 years. I know a lot of you out there think the world's going to end in 2012. It's not. Don't count on it. Remember, in this book, Ecoscience, John P. Holdren and the Ehrlichs, what are they talking about? They're talking about a global cooling fest. A new ice age to kill a billion by 2020. This book was written in the 70s. Now he's flipped the script. And it's global warming that's going to kill us all. Give me a break. And actually, we're going to play a video later for you. This guy basically talking about how the whole climate change dispute is a fake debate so that the corporations can make some more scratch. That's what it's about. And they get a little more control as well. All right, let's go to Ronnie in Texas. Ronnie, you're online.
Thank you, sir. I have one little scoop, and that is that the BBC says that Obama is already committed to massive troops in
Afghanistan.
Yeah, in Afghanistan and Pakistan and the whole shebang. And
no, he did. Listen, let me just explain this. In the very infancy of him actually taking off in the presidency, he said they were going to ship off 45 to 75,000 troops. That was before this debate that came up 3 weeks ago about a troop increase. They openly said they were going to redistribute forces from Iraq and send more forces into Afghanistan. Open news. Now the mainstream media picks up on the new news that he's considering sending, you know, 45 to 60,000 more. Well, he already did it. Go ahead.
Well, that was my main point, was that they did kind of make a scoop of it on the BBC, and I've paid attention, and you know, obviously before that, but especially since then, and not everybody in our country, you know, all of our controlled media has just been nothing but along the delusion is there's at least a two-week time period we have till Obama decides on this. So my point.
Well, I'll do one better. I opened up my new Rolling Stone with Madonna on the cover for some reason, if she's not totally irrelevant yet. And it's Obama battles the generals on Afghanistan. It's the mean generals who are on each side of him telling him he needs to send more troops. But Obama doesn't want to, but he's got to for our own good because he's here to save the world. It's the Info Warrior. Example of where man-made climate change is real, because we do have climate control. We have been seeding clouds and doing other little nefarious things for some time, and now Moscow mayor promises a winter without snow. That's right. One of the coldest places on Earth will have no snow this year in Moscow, according to the mayor. And I like how this one starts out. Pigs still can't fly. But this winter, the mayor of Moscow promises to keep it from snowing. For just a few million dollars, the mayor's office will hire a Russian Air Force to spray a fine chemical mist over the clouds before they reach the capital, forcing them to dump their snow outside the city. You hear that? They can manipulate the weather. This is weather modification. It exists. It's not just in some spy movie or on the sci-fi network. It's the real deal. Authorities say this will be a boon for Moscow, which is typically covered with a blanket of snow from November to March. Road crews won't need to constantly clear the streets and traffic. The quality of life will undoubtedly improve. The idea came from Mayor Yuri Lukov, who is no stranger to playing God. In 2002, he spearheaded a project to reverse the flow of the vast river Ob through Siberia to help irrigate the country's parched Central Asian neighborhoods. Although that idea hasn't exactly turned out as planned, scientists have said it's not feasible this time. Lukov says there's no way he can fail. Controlling the weather in Moscow is nothing new, he says. Ahead of the two main holidays celebrated in the city each year, Victory Day in May and City Day in September, the often cash-strapped Air Force is paid to make sure that it doesn't, well, rain on the parades. With a city budget of $40 billion a year, larger than New York City's budget, Moscow can easily afford the $2 to $3 million price tag to keep the skies blue as spectators watch the tanks and rocket launchers roll through Red Square. Now there's a new challenge for the Air Force, Moscow's notorious blizzards. You see that? They're willing to modify the weather to show their military force. How bizarre would it be to live in a country where these parades are all military guys and tanks and everybody saluting the flag, and like they had in China for the 60th anniversary of Mao and the Communist Party? We will serve the state! 80,000 children at once. I'm glad I don't live in a country like that. I never want to live in a country like that. I don't like that Russia is saying China is the new model. I don't like that we're going to be signing treaties with these two entities in Copenhagen about a global carbon tax and a world government. It's bad news, Brown. It's something we immediately need to step up to the plate against and swing for the fences. All right, let's go to Chuck in North Carolina. Chuck, you're on the line.
Hey, Jason, mega dittos from a two-time home birth Alex Jones and Jason Burmis, baby InfoWarrior Patriot.
Well, thank you, sir.
And I wanted to know if you had heard the clip of, I'm not sure who it is in the Obama administration, but she came up, and if you could play this, this would be great. She came up and said something along the lines of she had two philosophers who she had looked to, and one of them was Mao Zedong, and the other was Mother Teresa. Have you heard that?
No, I have heard that, and I saw that video. She's like a, she's a little over middle-aged woman. She's not, I'd say she's probably in her late 40s, early 50s. And yeah, she's like, Mao Zedong is one of my favorite philosophers. Isn't that lovely? The Mao love that's coming out in this country? He's such a good person, that Mao.
Yeah, well, Mao was great. But I'm just wondering, is there any chance that you're going to release the new Alex film tonight, The Fall of the Republic? Come on, man. You guys got to do it.
Chuck, I thank you for the call, my man. But why would I be able to release Alex Jones's new film early? I can't do that. It's the 18th, man. You're almost there. What is it, the 21st? 21st is the release date, right? We're 3 days away. It might not come online tonight, but don't be surprised if it comes online tomorrow or the day after, a little early, or maybe it'll be midnight on the 20th. Either way, you're going to like what you see. Fall of the Republic. Order it now at InfoWars.com or get ready to watch it live at PrisonPlanet.tv. This song, this was like the last song we just bumped. Come on, guys. All right. I'm done bitching about my bumper music until next week. Maybe, hopefully. At least I didn't have two times with that Aaron Lewis song. God. I like the song, but, you know, what are you going to do? We're going to... I hope people heard that. Was that live on the air? Oh, come on. See, my guy sits here and he talks to me. I want him to be on the air when he's talking to me. And, you know, there's a underground info warrior moment out there where one of the board ops who isn't here today, he's got a thing for Richard Marx, got all his albums. This Halloween, he's going to be dressing like Richard Marx. He's actually growing his hair out right now for kind of like this rat tail deal. And he just couldn't help himself. What was that Richard Marx tune that he played? It's like Forever Your Heart or something.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I thought he was going to be Lady Gaga.
Well, Lady Gaga, allegedly a man in some of these photographs I've seen. I don't buy into that conspiracy theory. I don't buy into the hokey ones, folks. I don't care about the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, or Lady Gaga being a man, or any of that Johnny nonsense. I stick to what I can prove. And for instance, let's just hit this article really quick, and then we're going to go over my Invisible Empire trailer. CIA is still cagey about Oswald mystery. Is the Central Intelligence Agency covering up some dark secret about the assassination of John F. Kennedy? Here's where the Johnny nonsense begins. Probably not, but you would not know it from the CIA's behavior. So off the bat, they're telling you, oh, don't worry. It looks shady, but it's not. We're really going to delve into this article in the upcoming segments. You can call in 888-201-2244, 512-646-1776. We're going to go over this article right after we hit up Invisible Empire, the trailer. Check it out. It's my next big pick.
Nazi forces seek to establish systems of government based on the regimentation of all human beings by a handful of individual rulers who seize power by force.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society.
And the hope that each of us has to build a new world order.
A new world order is coming into being, but it looks less and less like the world order that Mr. Kissinger had constructed in his own mind.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
What is the Bohemian Grove? Well, it's a kind of summer camp for the powerful.
Among its members, political figures like Gerald Ford, President Reagan, Vice President Bush, Richard Nixon is a bohemian. Each year, guests like Henry Kissinger or Zbigniew Brzezinski address members on their areas of expertise.
Be a poster child for these people because you have served on the board of the Council on Foreign Relations. You started, helped start the Trilateral Commission, and you've been to the Bilderberger groups.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy.
I don't believe in this notion of some sort of secret societies controlling people. But, of course, in any political system, there are sort of over-the-table and under-the-table arrangements.
It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine.
By the military-industrial complex.
Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised.
We can find meaning and reward by serving some higher purpose than ourselves. A shining purpose, the illumination of 1,000 points of light.
No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order. The quest for the new world order is in part a challenge to keep the dangers of disorder at bay.
We were interested today to hear that more than 100 law enforcement officials in Mexico are having microchips implanted in their arms. The chips allow a person to be scanned, sort of like a cereal box at the supermarket checkout.
I think the most important thing is for Barack Obama.
I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period when really a new world order can be created.
I think a new world order is emerging, and with it the foundations of a new and progressive era of international cooperation.
But the burdens of global citizenship continue to bind us together. In this new century, Americans and Europeans alike will be required to do more, not less. Partnership and cooperation among nations is not a choice.
Yes, these men and their hypnotized followers call this a new order. It is not new, and it is not order.
I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people.
That's right, Invisible Empire. Look for it February 12th, 2010. It can't come soon enough. It's really shaping up, and it'll be shipping out February 12th, 2010. Looking forward to it. It's my coup de grace picture. I've got some other projects in mind afterwards, but really, this is something that's been very near and dear to my heart now for over 5 years, a project that I've wanted to put out there that I just had not had the means to do, the time to write, the time to go get the interviews. And you're going to see G. Edward Griffin. You're going to see Peter Dale Scott. You're going to see Mark Dice in this picture. I'm probably going to see Cindy Sheehan in this film as well. Ralph Nader is going to make an appearance. And I'm thinking about throwing in the interview I got with the lead singer of Anti-Flag for all you punk rockers out there that, you know, are socially aware when you're listening to music as well. Speaking of music, I've got kind of a nice announcement. I haven't really talked about this on the air, but there's a video by a UK band out there called Fight Star that's going to be premiering either next week or the week after. And I was fortunate enough to work on this film, this little video. Originally, I was supposed to direct it, but I couldn't make my way out to the UK. So they had to have somebody else shoot it. I wasn't able to edit it. But the idea of this song/video is to open people's eyes to the realities of when they take a swine flu vaccination or the CCTV camera footage or the fluoride in the water. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but I was able to do all these posters that were then superimposed on large, you know, banners and subway posters that are seen all over London and the United Kingdom in general. And the video and the song are both top-notch. I've got a preview of it. I haven't seen the final edit yet, but if it's anywhere close to as good as the edit that I have, I am going to be proud to premiere it here on the InfoWarrior program. Maybe we'll be hitting that up sometime next week. I've got to get the go-ahead from the guys. As soon as it's launched, we will be playing it here. You can go check it out probably over my Facebook as well, facebook.com/TheInfoWarrior, or my MySpace, myspace.com/JasonBermis. So look out for that video. Fight Star is the band if you want to go check out some of their other stuff. And they've been just a pleasure to work with, and I want to give those guys big ups for being a popular band in the UK, ready to stand up against the establishment. Way to go, guys. All right, so I'm holding this article here. CIA still cagey about Oswald mystery. It's not a mystery. Let me just stop it right here. In my hand, I hold a memorandum from the director of the Central Intelligence Agency from March 3rd, 1964. And if you'd like to see this memorandum, just type in CIA Oswald Prison Planet. All one word, Prison Planet. Ready? We'll do it again, folks, like we're on Sesame Street. CIA Oswald Prison Planet. You just type that in, okay? Now, the first thing that's going to come up is confirmed. Oswald was a CIA operative. And in this memorandum, Mr. John McGowan, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, okay, and this is in a report for the assassination of John Kennedy, openly admits, oh yeah, in 1957, we did train Oswald under the Office of Naval Intelligence. You see, he was a CIA asset, and they used ONI, the Office of Naval Intelligence, to train him. It openly states it right here. Oswald, subject, was trained by this agency under cover of the Office of Naval Intelligence for Soviet, Soviet assignments. So here it is again. The CIA admitted in 1964 through its director, John McGowan, that Oswald was trained as a CIA agent. He got up to the confidential clearance, by the way. This is all, we have the documents. I know when Jones says it, a lot of people are like, he doesn't have the, I have the document in my hand. Oswald was CIA. Whether you believe he pulled the trigger or not, the man was trained by the Central Intelligence Agency through the Office of Naval Intelligence. Because again, this is an international intelligence organization that runs things. They love plausible deniability. They love the chase. They love the rat maze where you can't connect the dots, where you can't get to the inner circle of power. That's how they keep these things secret. They give you bits and pieces, and then they give you breadcrumb trails to lead you away from the truth. And that's really what this article is. For 6 years, the agency has fought in federal court to keep secret hundreds of documents from 1963. Folks, we're 46 years away from the event, and there's still hundreds of documents that are kept secret. It's really thousands upon thousands. This is hundreds pertaining to one small subject. The CIA says it's only protecting legitimate secrets, but because of the agency's history of stonewalling assassination inquiries, even researchers with no use for conspiracy thinking question its stance. Again, they just want conspiracy thinking. I have the document in my hand where it says Oswald was trained by the CIA in 57 through the Office of Naval Intelligence. That's conspiracy thinking. You pulled out a document from the Central Intelligence Agency, Jason Burmis, conspiracy thinking. Give me a break. Okay, the ones that they're trying to get declassified, check this out, involve the curious career of George E. Jonidis. I hope I'm saying that right. J-O-A-N-N-I-D-E-S. We're going to call him Jonidis. The case officer, check this out, who oversaw the dissident Cubans in 1963. In 1978, the agency made Mr. Joandis the liaison to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, but never told the committee of his earlier role. Weird. Now, let me tell you, this role that they divulge here with the Cubans and the dissidents there in 63 is nothing compared to what they reveal later in the article, but they give it less significance. That's how they work with these articles. They'll tell you, well, they want you to look at the Cuban connection, okay? Let me tell you, there's a bigger connection to this Jonidis guy. The concealment has fueled suspicion that Mr. Jonidis' real assignment was to limit what the House committee could learn about the CIA's activities. Of course that's what he was there for. Are you joking me? He wasn't there to help. He was there to hinder the investigation. The investigation, by the way, led to the fact, and again, you'll see this in Invisible Empire, we have the news clips where they admit, oh yeah, Kennedy, the younger and the older, yeah, both conspiracies. Yeah, totally don't know the truth about them. Oh, Martin Luther King Jr., also a conspiracy. That's what they came up with. And as more documents were getting pulled out there, George Bush, who was the director of the Central Intelligence Agency at the time, said, nope, nope, no more dockies for you, E. We stoppy. No more dockies. Okay? Check it out. Even Gerald Posner, who's the author of The Anti-Conspiracy, Case Closed, he's just a total apologist. He won't acknowledge these documents, won't acknowledge any government foreknowledge or involvement. He's, you know, Oswald's a lone nut. I'm the man. Look at me. Even Gerald Posner says this is a perfect example of why nobody trusts the agency. It feeds the conspiracy theorists who say you're hiding something, Mr. Posner. I mean, they are hiding something. It doesn't fuel anything. It fuels anybody with half a brain that can see that they haven't disclosed all the documents from almost 50 years ago regarding an assassination, that they are hiding something. Okay? The agency is withholding 295 specific documents from the 1960s and 70s while refusing to confirm or deny the existence of many others, saying their release would cause extremely grave damage to national security. National security, it's the end all be all. It's just, hey, hey, hey. Are we off the air, by the way? Are we sure? What am I losing it? We're just going, huh? Am I wrong, though? Were we supposed to be? I'm just going. Okay. All right. I'm good. National security. It's their favorite little term. They'll just call national security on anything. They'll classify drills on 9/11. They'll classify what Cheney was doing on 9/11. They'll have Bush and him testify together under no oath whatsoever with no recording devices. National security. No big deal. No biggie. An agency spokesman, Jim Iglanio from the CIA. The record doesn't support that anymore. It supports conspiracy theories, offensive on their face, that the CIA had a hand in President Kennedy's death. Remember, you can't question anything or you're being offensive. Do you understand? You're being offensive if you say, hey, the CIA might be involved. It doesn't matter. Again, if I have the document saying that Oswald was trained by the CIA in 1957. Okay, and then they throw out the excuse, oh, the CIA hid its schemes to kill Fidel Castro, and that came out in the House Select Committee on Intelligence as well, the LSD thing and all that other stuff. His lawsuit has uncovered the central role in overseeing directorate activities of Mr. Janaitis. Now, check this out. Janaitis was the deputy director for psychological warfare at the CIA's Miami station, codenamed J.M. Wave. So the guy who was handing out all the documents to the House Select Committee was the deputy director for PSYOPs in the CIA's Miami station. This guy's a psychological warfare expert. He worked closely with directorate leaders. Documents show corresponding with them under pseudonyms, paying their travel expenses, and achieving an important degree of control over the group, as a July 1963 agency fitness report put it. So this guy worked all sorts of black ops. He worked all sorts of psychological operations. And he was in charge of getting the documents for the House Select Intelligence Committee to see what they could find out about the assassinations of JFK, RFK, and MLK. He doesn't sound too trustworthy. Dan Hardaway, then a law student working on the committee, recalled Mr. Janaitis as a cold fish who firmly limited access to documents. Once Mr. Hardaway remembered, he handed me a thin file and just stood there. I blew up and he said, "This is all you're gonna get, kid." Again, this is New York Times. This isn't Jason Burmes. It's New York Times. There's some golden nuggets in the disinformation piece they put out here. If I'd known of his role in 1963, I would have put Janaitis under oath. He would have been a witness, not a facilitator, said Mr. Blakely, a law professor at the University of Notre Dame. How do we know what he didn't give us? And then Posner jumps in. And he's kind of right about this, but not really. See, Posner is one of these guys, and he'll have his cake and eat it too. He says, most conspiracy theorists don't understand this, but if there were really a CIA plot, no documents would exist. And there are no documents existing in the CIA that say that they pulled the trigger. Okay. What there are is all these linkages to having agents on the scene, there to cover it up, on the scene, there to make sure they're the first ones to get the body, on the scene to make sure they clean up the car, on the scene to make sure that the windows are open, on the scene to make sure that he's a Patsy Oswalt, that he has a background of communism. That's what they're there for. And there's plenty of documents, just like the one I read, which refutes the official story. Again, Oswalt, trained by the CIA. Unbelievable. But it happened. It is real. So go check it out. CIA is still cagey about Oswald mystery. And then watch. Go check out the document from the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, March 3rd, 1964. You type in CIA Oswald prisonplanet.com and you are going to be amazed at what you find. Man, I have such a huge stack of news. What do I get to next? Ooh, this is a juicy one. Everybody knows that I'd like to play the clip of Ted Turner talking about population sustainability, admitting that global warming is happening. Remember, global warming is happening because there's too many people doing too many things. Obviously eugenics, obviously somebody who would be in favor of Chinese one-child policies. But Ted Turner wants back on CNN, but not just CNN. He doesn't want to just run CNN again. He wants to run the Cartoon Network again. I like the Cartoon Network. I watch a lot of Adult Swim. Robot Chicken, one of the best shows on television. You like the Robot Chicken, don't you, Paul? You got to admit, it's hot. It's good stuff. Check this out. As for the Cartoon Network, Turner tells anchor Betty Lou, if I had control of it, I'd put Captain Planet on at a top time period so that kids would see the environmental superhero instead of just Superman. Now, I was a, preteen, teenager around the time that Captain Planet got popular or was really pushed on us in the mainstream media. And I can tell you, I used to watch the cartoon. It was bloody awful. You know, give me gummy bears and DuckTales any day of the week. Captain Planet was a poorly drawn, poorly conceived, poorly done cartoon character / comic book that they couldn't even force down the throats of children. And this guy is so out of touch. He thinks that he's going to be able to use the Cartoon Network to brainwash this generation, into believing in global warming. In fact, you know what, Hartman, why don't you find that clip of Ted Turner and sustainability where he talks for population control? You know which one it is. Maybe you can find it on the YouTube. We'll play it in the large segment coming up. I'd like CNN to report to me and the Cartoon Network. Well, Ted's totally and completely out of the loop. He was really pushed out of the organization with the merger and Time Warner. A lot of his wealth and power were taken away from him, but the establishment still likes him because he's such a proponent of population sustainability. He's a proponent of global warming, and he's probably a proponent of the old carbon taxing. Remember, tax to live, tax to breathe, tax to take your garbage out, tax to have a second car, tax to have a 42-inch television. Because Schwarzenegger says no on the big screens. We're going to come back after this. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes. Go check us out at PrisonPlanet.tv and Infowars.com. Latest and greatest drops on the 21st. If you haven't ordered a copy, get in line today. Go to Infowars.com and get that copy, or get ready for the PrisonPlanet.tv release on the 21st and get the burners a-going. We'd love for you to download it in super high quality DivX style, burn it to disk, hand it to your neighbors, your friends, your family, and get the word out. All right, we're going to continue to take your calls, 888-201-2244 on any topic you'd like, but we got this big news blitz, just a stacker I have not been able to go through. The New Yorker, searching for trouble. This is October 12th, earlier in the week. In this, they admit that Google, okay, to refine their search engine and make it safer for people to search. They used Al Gore, the very loving environmentalist, as a consultant. What is Al Gore so involved with the internet for? Well, he's here to bring in tyranny in the face of a savior. You look at current TV, they do a lot of good work. They let people go out there, do real stories, but there's certain ones they just won't touch. And now he's here to help them censor Google, searching for trouble. Go check out the entire article over at The New Yorker. I'm sure there will be a link over at prisonplanet.tv and infowars.com. Now, the Canadian dollar climbs towards parity as stocks, crude oil rally. The Canadian dollar rallied for a third straight week, touching a 14-month high and moving closer to parity with its U.S. counterpart as signs of economic recovery pushed commodities and stocks higher. Now, remember, the Canadian dollar has been on parity with the dollar in recent months and years. It's pretty much the same. But 10 years ago, the dollar was about, you know, it was 75 cents to the dollar. We were maybe a quarter more valuable. That's over with because they want to promote a North American union. They want to promote harmony, economic harmony, they call it, between Mexico, the United States, and Canada. And that is just the reality of the situation. Canada, you got another thing. You know, you've got people talking about a new world order in your country. You had an entire 3-day conference about it. In fact, somebody just sent me the links to that conference and some of the speakers there. I have to download it. But there were just a ton of globalists over there telling everybody how great world government's going to be and how it's going to save us all. They were talking about the new world order, their terminology for it. I didn't come up with the term. I am repeating what others in prominent positions have said, have called for openly. But I'm the conspiracy theorist. Give me a break. You know, before I forget, I do want to play this clip of Ted Turner, who, again, he wants to take over CNN. He wants more environmental and global issue stories out there, less fluff pieces. But he really wants to take over the Cartoon Network so Captain Planet can have a time slot so he can brainwash the kiddies one more time. Here he is on Charlie Rose talking about global warming and how we're bad.
Not doing it will be catastrophic. We'll have 8 degrees, we'll be 8 degrees hotter in 30 or 40 years, and basically none of the crops will grow. Most of the people will have died, and the rest of us will be cannibals. Civilization will have broken down. What the few people that are left will be living in a failed state like Somalia or Sudan. And living conditions will be intolerable. The droughts will be so bad there'll be no more corn growing. Not doing it is suicide. Just like dropping bombs on each other, nuclear weapons is suicide. So we've got to stop doing the two suicidal things, which are hanging on to our nuclear weapons
and global emissions.
And then after that, we've got to stabilize the population. When I was born,
what's wrong with the population? I mean,
with too many people. That's why we have global warming. We have global warming because too many people are using too much stuff.
But
if there were less people, they'd be using less stuff. If we don't get global warming and the nuclear weapons straight out, we don't have to worry about
it. All right, let's just stop it right there. I mean, if you can't understand from that man that population sustainability and stabilization means you have to have one child or pay a tax or you have to die at a certain age, if you don't understand this is eugenics, when Salon.com is coming out and saying that contraception fights global warming, that's a headline. Salon.com 2 weeks ago, contraception fights global warming. It's a eugenics program. It has jack squat to do with the environment. It's about killing you and yours, whether it's a soft kill or a slow kill or a policy. They don't care about you. You're less than a fly on the wall. They would fumigate your house in a second if they were given the opportunity. Just like, boom, done. All right, let's continue to take your calls. Let's go to Jim in Arkansas. Jim, you're on the line.
Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
First, I wanted to say I heard what you guys did in Pittsburgh, and frankly, I think you guys have got big brass ones.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I'm just trying to do my thing.
Okay. Reason I called, and I may be way oversimplifying it, but wouldn't Obama going to Copenhagen in whatever date is in December, wouldn't that be maybe another poster contest? I mean, wouldn't
Ooh,
it?
Another Obama post. You know what? I think this has to go beyond a poster contest. I think that this has to go into an awakening project, and possibly posters are part of the way to do it, Jim, in that we are really going to have a world government. I have not seen this treaty online. If anybody knows where I can get a PDF copy of the entire treaty, I promise you that tomorrow I will take this PDF copy, I will scour it for keywords, I will highlight out the big, you know, the world government sections, the carbon tax sections, the sections that really spell out the tyranny. We'll do a whole special on it next week, and perhaps some people can go out there, get the documents, get the quotes, and make the posters up, and we can fight this thing. We really need to fight this thing tooth and nail. This is as serious as it gets, Jim.
Well, get the title of the actual conference and the actual date or dates. I think that would be a big help.
Well, anybody can do that. I mean, if you type in Copenhagen conference, it's, I mean, I've been reading these small articles about it all over the place. I think I've got a couple in front of me right now. If anybody can just find the document, I don't know if Monckton over there, he's special because he's, you know, one of these insiders in London, or if everybody's been able to read this document, if it's been leaked to the press, I have no idea. But if it has been leaked to the press, myspace.com/Jason Burmis or facebook.com/TheInfoWarrior. And I'm going to do my best to get this story out as quickly as possible, because we only have a couple of months, maybe even less than 2 months at this point, if it's in early December, to stop us signing on to this global government treaty. Thank you for the call, Jim. Let's jump to Chris in Pennsylvania. Chris, you're on the line.
Hey, Alex. I have a question.
Sure.
During the election, recent election, Obama started making all these promises. A week after he got elected, half of them are broken. What's
I would
the
say
deal
more than half.
That?
Well, I mean, yeah. Have you watched the Obama deception yet?
No, not yet.
Well, you got to watch. All right, look, man, what we do here, and I'm not Alex, I'm Jason, but I also make movies and I help out on these films as well. We show you what he said beforehand and what he's actually done. Now, the Obama deception is around 2 hours. It's online for free. Go to YouTube.com. You slap in the Obama deception. You watch the whole thing online. And it shows, hey, he made this promise. He made this promise. He made this promise. And this is what he's actually done. This is what he's actually done. Because he is a puppet of Wall Street, Chris. He got more funding from Wall Street than Hillary Clinton did. He got more funding from Wall Street than John McCain did. This man is a charismatic speaker that they have propped up as the front man for global government. Let me give you an example. In 2004, what was Barack Obama? Can you tell me, Chris?
A senator.
Oh, you said senator. Weird. He was not a senator in 2004. You know what he was? He was a state senator. Now, state senate is a lot easier to get into Senate because we have two senators per state. You understand that, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Now, then they have these other guys that are state senators. They're more along the lines of congressmen, but they're not part of the House, so they're not as prominent as congressmen either. It's kind of a stepping stone to the next piece of political work that you're going to do. Now, in 2004, as a state senator, he was running for Senate, an actual Senate position. Yet before he won that election, he was the keynote speaker at the Democratic National Convention in 2004, you know, when John Kerry was running. So they propped this guy up as a great speaker in 2004. Now, he runs for Senate, and he actually does win in 2004, becomes a senator, I believe, in 2005. Now, he serves less than 3 years as an actual senator. Senator's terms are 6 years. He did not even serve half a term as a regular senator. He ran for the presidency of the United States of America and won. There has never been a president who is less qualified to run this country than Barack Obama that has less experience. Zero. You can't name one. The only other person that comes to mind is the president before him, George W. Bush, who is a one-term governor. I think he won for a second term, but he didn't serve the entire term. You hear what I'm saying? They're propping up puppets. That's what's up with that. It doesn't matter if they're a Democrat or a Republican. Guess what? They're owned by the same banksters, bro. Please watch the Obama deception. Then after you watch the Obama deception, because that's going to take you a couple days to comprehend, to wrap your mind around, on the 21st, Barack Obama, the presidency, fall of the republic will be out. It'll be on prisonplan.tv. I'm sure it's going to hit YouTube. Watch that as well. I mean, we carefully document what a fraud this guy is. Any other questions, Chris?
Yeah. Did you hear about the guy who brought the AR-15 to the Obama speech?
I watched the video on that, and he had a permit for it, right?
No, it was a black guy, and the cop stole it. It was loaded, and it was on his back.
Yeah, but he had a permit for the gun. Well, he wasn't an assassin. I mean, all right, look, I believe we had him on the show, Chris. I appreciate the call. And he had a permit for that weapon, and he was just, you know, showing people, hey, I have an open carry permit. I can carry this weapon here. It's part of the Constitution and Bill of Rights. It's ingrained in our society. That's all that he was doing there. I've seen some other people do that as well. He's not an assassin. If he was an assassin, the Secret Service would have been all over him, all over him. Look, Barack Obama is a great speaker. He's very charismatic. He gets his message across. Kids are hugging Barack Obama, asking him, why do people hate you? Why do people hate you, Barack? And he's like, well, let's get something straight here. I did win the presidency, so there are people, a lot of people voted for me, got a lot of votes. Not everybody hates me. But, you know, there are those out there that don't like my policies just because of the party I'm in or the color of my skin. I'm Barack Obama. Everybody loved me. And they've propped up this image. You know, when I went to buy this Captain America t-shirt, which I think is pretty snazzy, by the way, I'm rolling through the Marshalls line. And what do I see? I see the Rolling Stone cover where Barack H. Obama is dressed up like God. Okay, he's in the suit and he's in the clouds and the lightning is striking him. And, you know, he's dressed up. That's the t-shirt you can buy in the store. He's a hip hop image. He's a bottle of Coca-Cola. He's a Pepsi product. Okay, he's Madison Avenue on steroids. That's what Barack Obama really represents. And he's taken it to a new level. I mean, again, he's at the Points of Light Foundation with George H.W. Bush talking about how great it is to serve your country for free. Join AmeriCorps. Give a year. How can you take off a year of work in this economy? What kind of crack are you smoking? Seriously. Yet he's indoctrinating the youth. All these commercials of City Year kids, which are a part of AmeriCorps, they're in formation, they're doing jumping jacks, they're helping the community, they are change, they are fierce. It's disturbing, but it sells an image that if you want to be part of the change that Barack Obama is bringing, join City Year. It doesn't matter what we're really doing. It doesn't matter if we're socializing the system and we're moving towards a more communist way of life. We're moving towards population sustainability. That doesn't matter. Remember, Russia openly saying that China is the model for world government. I mean, give me a break. And then through these Copenhagen treaties and through the fear-mongering of the mainstream media, scientists released no new polar ice findings. And it's like, bum, 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 we're all doomed. I mean, that's what this says. But then you read the subheadline. Critics say flawed Catalan Arctic expedition couldn't produce reliable scientific results. So on the one hand, the guy's like, oh, it's unbelievable. The polar ice caps are melting. On the other hand, the people that looked at the research, they're like, are you joking? This is the worst science I've ever seen in my life. And then right here, it's Arctic to be ice free in summer in 20 years. The Arctic now in 20 years isn't going to have any ice. Remember, John P. Holdren. In the 70s, told us the complete opposite, that in 2020, we were going to lose 1 billion people to an ice age. They flipped the script. They taught my parents that a global cooling phase was going. We had to fight global cooling and then an ice age was on the way. They taught me that chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, were killing the ozone layer and that global warming was going to stop my children from being able to even go outside without some kind of a hazmat suit on. And now they've changed the language yet again to talk about carbon. To talk about carbon. What you exhale as the enemy of America and the world. Carbon. And we need carbon cops. And it's not even global warming anymore. It's climate change. Well, of course the climate is going to change. The climate has always changed. That's what Earth is. Okay? We were once Pangea. The Earth is a living entity. Of course it's going to change. Doesn't mean humans don't have any impact on that, but we certainly don't have the impact where we're going to heat up the planet to the point where we're doomed. It's not only bad science, it's a bad science fiction movie. It's like something out of, I wouldn't even say the Twilight Zone, because the Twilight Zone is way cooler. What's that other show? What was that knockoff of The Outer Limits? It's like The Outer Limits, like a cheesy knockoff of the Twilight Zone. That's what I feel like I'm living in. Here's another climate headline. Great climate swoop. 10 arrests ahead of eco-protest at Ratcliffe on Soar power station. 10 people have been arrested as demonstrators converge on Ratcliffe on Soar power station near Nottingham to protest against climate change. Now, you know, here's what's funny about this. These were preemptive arrests, and I don't know if all these people were involved. And again, they're making the people who are, you know, saying, oh, we got to have all these regulations, all these well-meaning idiots out to be the enemy so that they can use it as an excuse for preventive crime measures to preemptively arrest you before you've actually committed a crime. So there's just so many facets to this hype around global warming and climate change. They're using it as a tool to arrest people before they commit crimes. They're using it as a tool to tax the regular populace. They're using it as a tool to get you to have one child, to live in a smaller home, to drive a smaller car, to pay higher prices for gasoline, to run your neighbor in when you see them out there with too many bags of garbage. And it's garbage itself if you believe that, if you think that that's the way everything should be. Biggest economies try again to strike climate deal. Representatives of the world's 17 biggest and most polluting nations were holding a talk Sunday to search for a breakthrough on financing efforts to contain climate change and reduce gas emissions causing global warming. And what are they talking about? The December conference in Denmark, where they're really going to bring cap and trade into the mix. In fact, the date may actually be on here. Final segment coming up. It's the Info Warrior with Jason Burmes, PrisonPlanet.tv, Infowars.com. Confirmed the dates on this Copenhagen treaty, December 7th to the 18th, 11 days. I wonder when President Barack H. Obama will be grandstanding with his buddy Gordon New World Order Brown. He loves to throw that terminology around there. But then again, David Cameron, who's going to be his successor, loves to use it as well. The world's future is being decided this weekend. We must agree to halt deforestation and curtail air travel now in the Copenhagen summit is to succeed. You see, curtail air travel. You're only going to be able to fly a few times a year. You'll have to get permits. And if you fly too much, well, you'll just have to pay some fees. Energy and environment ministers from the world's major economies are meeting in London today to try to accelerate crucial negotiations over an international treaty on climate change. Strong progress has been made in the past few weeks, with Japan, for example, announcing that it will cut emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases by 25% by 2020 relative to levels in 1990. But there are still major obstacles and some doubt whether a strong global deal can be hammered out in time for the United Nations conference. Oh, UN. The United Nations Conference on Climate Change in Copenhagen, now just 7 weeks away. Agreement can be reached if governments now focus on the key issue, the required overall reduction in emissions, with rich countries taking the lead through strong binding targets and financial support for developing countries. Numbers are important to this, so let me explain why. I can't even read the rest of this. It's total garbage, okay? If they wanted us to have an electric car, we could have an electric car. We had one in the 80s. It was already getting 80 miles to a charge in the 80s, 20 years ago. They didn't let people buy the car. In fact, there is a car company out there right now. If you want to bring it up really quick, Tesla Motors. Just type in Tesla Motors, I think, or Tesla Cars. Either way, you'll come up with the website. And they have electric cars right now. And I think that they have something like 130 miles to it, one charge. 130 miles to a charge. Oh, but it's not possible. We could be having electric cars with solar hybrids, but guess who doesn't win there? Big oil doesn't win. The establishment doesn't win. So instead, they'll just tax you for every single thing you do. There it is right there. Oh, but electric cars don't exist. Oh, wait, no, they do, and you can buy one right now. But you're not encouraged to, and they do look slick. They're pretty expensive. I think they're in the 80 to 150 grand range, definitely not something that the Info Warrior can afford. But the technology here is here. If they wanted to have Ford or General Motors, you know, in the wake of them by design collapsing that industry. They could have saved them with that technology. Absolutely could have done it. They don't want you to be empowered. They want you to be paying out your arness on everything. They want 60, 70, 80% of your entire income to make it impossible for you to raise a family comfortably, to make it impossible for you not to hand out, go, please, state, help me. Help me, government. Oh, but Barack Obama will tell you, well, there are some things the government just shouldn't be involved in. Really? Like health care? Like I shouldn't be seeing on the cover of Newsweek the case for killing granny? Makes me want to throw up. The case for killing granny? I'm going to pull the plug on my grandmother? What kind of sick, twisted society is this? When did our moral compass just go completely out the window? When did we decide to piss all over humanity as if it was cool and fashionable? It ain't cool. It ain't fashionable. You know what's cool? Helping out your neighbor. Loving your friends and family. Helping out a stranger. That's cool. That's what life is all about. Doing for others so that things will be done unto for yourself and your family. Karma's a real deal, folks. What goes around comes around. And if you want to be a self-centered, egotistical loser that just is obsessed with UT football as their main escape and the most important thing in their life and their Winston cigarettes and their Jenny Light beer and your Xbox 360, yeah, we are doomed. If you're going to step up to the plate and say no to this Copenhagen Treaty and really ball out for humanity, then maybe we got a shot. Maybe we got a chance at the title. I'm hoping. It's the Info Warrior back next week, 6 to 9 Sundays. Go check out the podcast at theinfowarrior.com.